There is a halacha that the Rama writes that mevatlin tinoka shel beis rabban on Tisha B'Av, that tinoka shel beis rabban don't learn. We don't have yeshiva for kids, even in those schools like in the old city where they have school 364 days a year. On Tisha B'Av, they don't have yeshiva. And there's a discussion in Poskim why that is, because after all, the Yisra to learn Torah is because of Pikud Hashem Yishar Misam Chilev. And typically speaking, kids don't really love it so much. It doesn't give them so much simcha. So why would we be mevatel tinokos shel beis rabban? So the Taz writes that it's because the Rebbeim love teaching it so much that it's going to give the Rebbeim simcha. The problem with that is that Magen Avraham holds that that we're not even allowed to learn Devarim Haraim with the children on Tisha B'Av, that mevatel tinokos shel beis rabban entirely. You don't even learn Churban HaGadotas with, well, maybe Churban HaGadotas, but you don't even learn like Moed Katan and Yirmiyahu and things like that with the children. So Rav Soloveitchik explained that perhaps the issue of the reason we're mevatel tinokos shel beis rabban is not about the fact that it's the Torah brings simcha. That's a separate issue. That's why we're not allowed to learn Torah, but you are allowed to learn Devarim Haraim. But maybe mevatel tinokos shel beis rabban is because we don't do any public shiurim, any giving over of Torah in the normal type of way on Tisha B'Av to symbolize that Torah, the Torah is in avelus, that Torah loves shisak, that it's as if the Torah is wearing sackcloth, that there's a loss of Torah with the Churban Habayis, and that's one of the ways that we express that by not teaching publicly. So I just try to mention every year that when I told Rav Shechter once that this beautiful minhag we have in our shul where we learn Churban Agadata, I said, I give a shiur on Churban Agadata on Tisha B'Av night. He said, you give a shiur on Tisha B'Av night? No, I'd give a shiur on Tisha B'Av night. He was not impressed. So I just make a point of saying, I'm not giving a shiur. This is not a prepared shiur. I'm just learning the Churban HaGadata a little more loudly than I normally would if I were learning it at home. And everyone is welcome to listen in and to read along, but it's not a public shiur. So that's the concession we're making toward that concern of holding public drushas on Tisha B'Av. And of course, as always, I don't know how far we'll get before I conk out, but certainly everyone is welcome to leave whenever you had enough, and or zoom out whenever you zoom off, whenever you had enough. And it's really if I'm here alone, again, the point is that I'm supposed to be learning here alone, and it's just that other people are welcome to listen in. So even if you're the last person here, don't feel bad. Oh, the Zoom conked out. It listened. Hopefully it'll come back. So even if I'm here alone at the very end, then don't worry about that. We're going to start from the beginning of the Churban HaGadotas, even though that's where we start from. It's trying to reconnect. Yeah. It's working on it. Probably a phone is more reliable, but I didn't bring my phone. Okay. So, there we are. We're back. We're going to start from the beginning of the Churban HaGadotas, even though that's where we start every year, and we never quite get to the end. But it starts at the two dots in Daf Nun Hay and Beis, for anyone who has a Gemara with them, about seven lines from the end of the page. So the Gemara tells us, we don't have to go through why the Gemara brings this up in the fifth parak of Maseches Gittin, of all places, why we get into the Churban. Right now, it's because the Mishnah told me something about some halacha relating to Gittin that happened during the time of the Melchama with Titus in Yerushalayim. So once it mentions that in the Mishnah, it goes through the whole story of the Churban Yerushalayim. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, my duchsiv, when the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Ashrei Adam Mefache Tamid, Umak Shalibo Yipol Bara'a. So what is the Pasuk referring to? It says that a person is praiseworthy or fortunate if he's always worried that his actions are going to cause some sort of problem in the future, meaning that a person has to be able, it's a good thing for a person to think about the fact that actions have consequences, that words have consequences, that whatever he does has a consequence, and it could be that it's far-reaching consequences. It could be something that's not mamish right in front of your face, that it's going to take a long time until the consequences are realized, and therefore a person has to be very hesitant before taking any drastic steps. And someone who's overconfident and he's not choshesh, if anyone has a phone that can get on Zoom, that might be better because this keeps coming out. Anyone who's not choshesh, sorry for all the Zoomers. Anyone who's not choshesh about anything and he's overconfident, it's gonna be his undoing. So there's something about that. That's the introduction to the whole sugya, that there's a pasuk that says that a person has to realize that small actions have major consequences. So I don't think we ever focused on that. That's really the theme of the whole story the Gemara is about to introduce. The Gemara is about to introduce the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. So you think, okay, one little squabble with a guy, one little disagreement with a fellow where you weren't so nice to somebody. Like, what impact is that going to have if you weren't super nice to somebody? But it has a significant impact if you weren't so nice to somebody, that's what caused the entire Churban of Yerushalayim. And a person is just so confident that if he feels that it's not right, I didn't invite this guy, what's he doing here? You know, and in a very narrow way, he may be right. If you're looking in the very narrow moment, he may be right. You know, why should I have this guy at my Suda? I didn't ask this guy to come to my Suda. So again, very, very narrowly, he might be right. But people have to be conscious of the fact that there's far-reaching consequences to even small things that we do, both the tov and the ra, both on the good and in the bad. There's far-reaching consequences to what we do, and therefore, if a person sometimes gives a person a smile, a hello, or whatever, you never know what kind of day that person is having and what kinds of consequence that can have. How many stories we have of, like, boys that almost left yeshiva or whatever and never to come back when just at the right time a roommate, a chavrusa, someone did something, acted a little more warmly toward them, a little more friendly toward them, and that caused them to stay and then change the entire trajectory of their lives, where you have very, very small ben adam l'chavero interactions in one way or the other, that every single interaction might count and it might have really, really significant long-term effects. So that's the introduction. So says the Gemara, we're going to give three statements that are a heading to the entire Churban Agadita, and they are Akamtsu Bar Kamtsu Charev Yerushalayim. Because of the story with Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. That's going to be story number one. Atarnagol v'tarnagolosa Charev Tur Malka. Because of the story that happened with a tarnagol and a tarnagoles, the city of Har HaMelech was destroyed. And number three, Asak D'Rispak Charev Beitar. Because of the wall of a chariot, Beitar was destroyed. Because of a story that happened with the wall of a chariot for women, the entire city of Beitar was destroyed. The Churban Beitar was a very, very significant Churban, perhaps even in terms of death toll greater than the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Churban Beis HaMikdash is the Churban Beis HaMikdash, but in terms of the death toll in Klal Yisrael, it was very, very significant. And those are the three statements that frame the entire coming Gemara. You know, sometimes the Gemara will start with a simin, you know, that it will just have a Rashi Tevis. So here it does a little better than a Rashi Tevis. Instead of just giving us a Rashi Tevis, it gives us these three phrases to see what's going to happen in this Gemara. So Akamtsu Bar Kamtsu Charev Yerushalayim. On account of Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed.
I'm reading this because this has echo.
Oh, it's going in. Sorry. Okay. So Kamtsa Bar Kamtsa Charev Yerushalayim, because of Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed. And we're about to see that it wasn't really because of Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa. It was because of Bar Kamtsa. Bar Kamtsa was the one that brought about the whole destruction. He's the one that did everything. Kamtza is absent, really, from the entire story that we're about to see. We all know the story, right? Kamtza is the guy that was supposed to be invited. He wasn't invited. It's not that he got insulted for not being invited and went and was malshin or anything. We don't know anything about him. He didn't do anything. So the Chida writes that it doesn't mean that it was Kamtza's fault. It means that because of the confusion of the names of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Meaning, over such a simple mistake, over a minor slight in, or a minor mistake at the calligrapher doing the invitations, you know, the entire Yerushalayim was destroyed. But it's not that it's actually blaming Kamtza. Other Acharonim think that, in a certain sense, it is because of Kamtza. In Yaakov, he writes that we mention Kamtza because we're trying to highlight that sometimes when a person creates machlokas with other people, he finds chizik in his friends. That it's easier to have a machlokas with other people if you could turn to your friends and they'll support you. And they'll say, yeah, you're totally right, that other guy is a terrible person and he's wrong and he's a jerk and he's not respectful and he's this and he's that. And a person can find chizik from his friends. And sometimes that's not the job of a friend. The job of a friend is to tell you to pull yourself together, get over your pride, and to make shalom, because there's nothing that's more important than shalom. And you know, sometimes we have these hang-ups where we're so, you know, and sometimes we're even right, but is it worth it, is really the question. Just last week, a kid in the NCSY Kollel came and he said, you know, when the Kollel started, they asked if anyone wants to lane, and I said, I'm laning Ve'es Chanan. And then another kid told me that he wants to lane Ve'es Chanan. He says, you know, why should I let him do any of the laning? I don't want to. I called it. I got it first. So I said, you're right, but is it worth arguing about? Maybe you could just come up with a compromise. But like, to him, it's my bar mitzvah parsha. I want to lane it. This is my thing, you know. But sometimes you just, again, you zoom out a little bit. You just think a little bigger picture. Is it worth getting somebody upset, even when you're right, even if a person is correct? And a lot of times we have friends who don't want to upset us and who are so nervous about doing something to upset us. So instead, they just support us, even in our averos, even in our machlokas, and they apply negative peer pressure sometimes. So in that sense, perhaps Kamtza is also somewhat to blame over here. So the Gemara tells the story that Hu Gavra, there was this fellow, Derachamei Kamtza. His good friend was Kamtza. And the fact that that was his good friend, the Acharonim point out, in the Sifta he quotes from the Yismach Moshe, that the Gemara says that he had this good friend Kamtza to tell me that the Aveira that caused the Churban was not that they didn't fulfill the Haftal Re'acha Kamocha. The Aveira that caused the Churban was Sinas Chinam, meaning those are not the same thing. The Haftal Re'acha Kamocha could be the guy fulfills the Haftal Re'acha Kamocha with 90% of the people that he knows, and he would do anything for his friends. Sometimes you hear that about people. They would do anything for their friends. It's not always such a kunz that you'll do anything for your friends. It's also a mitzvah, the Haftal Re'acha Kamocha. But aside from that, there's a separate issue called Sinas Chinam. There's a separate problem called Sinas Chinam. So it's important to emphasize, it's not that the guy didn't have the Haftal Re'acha Kamocha. He really loved Kamtza. He would have done anything for Kamtza. He would have given the shirt off his back for Kamtza. But he had Sinas Chinam toward Bar Kamtza. And all the love you have for all the people that are in your circle does not justify any amount of sinas chinam to the people outside of your circle. And that's why the Gemara highlights, says the Yismach Moshe, that rachamei kamtza ubal devavei bar kamtza. The person he didn't like was bar kamtza. So avet sudasa. So this fellow made a suuda. Varmalei l'shamei zilai sili kamtza. So he told the shamash, he told the servant, go invite for me kamtza. I want kamtza at my suuda because he's my best friend. And the fellow made a mistake and he brought Bar Kamtza instead. Marsha points out that, you know, can it be a coincidence that one guy's name is Kamtza and the other one's name is Bar Kamtza? Bar means son of. So says Marsha, it's obviously not a coincidence, it's a father and a son. And he really liked the father and he couldn't stand the son. And that must be what happened over here. And Bar Kamsa assumed that, you know, because you got to think, like, you know, you get an invitation, and, you know, sometimes you really have people that are perplexed by this. You know, sometimes people are perplexed, why didn't I get an invitation? I'm such a good guy, I'm so friendly with this person, how come I wasn't invited? So people get perplexed about that. But you got to imagine, this is like a sworn enemy. You know, he's Bal Devave. He's the enemy of this guy. And he got an invitation. What was he thinking? Shouldn't he have realized that it was a mistake? That obviously he wasn't supposed to be invited. So that's what the Marsha says. Elamai, he realized this is my father's good friend. So probably he's trying to reach out to me, that the friendship should span generations. It's always sweet. It's always nice. It's a nice feeling when you have friendships that work like that in a family, that span generations. I'm reminded of the Maisa. They say that when Rav Schneur Cutler passed away, that Rav Salvechik, Zichron Levracha, went to be Menachem Avel, Rav Malkia, and he said to him, I was friends with your grandfather, I was friends with your father, and I'm your friend also. You know, I'm going to be friends with you as well. Meaning that there's something warm about that, there's something nice about that, when you have friendships, they're able to span generations, and Bar Kamsa probably figured, that's why I'm being invited, because he's my father's friend. That's Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. However, not all Achronim agree with the Marsha. The Yun Yaakov writes that, no, Rashi says in Dibra Maskul Kamsa, Kach Shem Shnei Yehudim. This is the name of two Jewish people. And why does Rashi tell me that? Why would I think, you know, why would I think otherwise? So that's what they point out, that Rashi's probably highlighting that, no, each one is a name. Kamsa's a name, Bar Kamsa's a name. It's not that one is the son of Kamsa. Not like the Marsha says, that it's a father and son. And the Hechrich to say that it's not a father and son, because if it were a father and son, then the Gemara would have said, A Kamsa Ubrei. About Kamsa and his son, but it didn't say Akamsa Ubre, it said Akamsa Ubar Kamsa. So these are two separate people, no relation to each other. They just had similar names. So anyway, Asa Ashkechei Davi Yosef. So the Bal Suuda sees that Bar Kamsa is sitting at the Suuda. So Amalei Michti, Hau Gavra Bal Devavadu Gavruhu. He says, you're my sworn enemy. My Bayisacha, what are you doing over here? Why are you at my Suuda? Kumpuk, get up, get out. I don't want you in my suda. Samalei, so Bar Kamsa said, Hol va'asai, look, once I'm here already, Shavkan, just leave me alone. Let me stay at the suda. Look, I know you didn't mean to invite me, but I get that. But I'm here, why are you going to throw me out? So Yehivnilach demei madach el nashsina. Yeah, it won't cost you any money. Whatever it costs per head, you know, I'll be happy to, you know, to pay for my portion. Whatever the amount is. Mestama wasn't as much as today's sudos, you know, today's weddings per head, so it wasn't such a generous offer at first. My son told me he was just taking a tour of the Belzer Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. That's what they call it, the Beis HaMikdash, but it's obviously not really the Beis HaMikdash. It's probably bigger than the Beis HaMikdash, actually. But he said that the guy giving the tour said that his son just got engaged, and they're you know, he met the Kala once, and they got engaged, and they're gonna get married in the Belzer Simcha Hall, and it costs 40 shekel a head. So 40 shekel a head. So can't get a slice of pizza and a drink in the five towns for 40 shekel a head. So I told all my children, standing offer, you want to get married in Bells, you're welcome to get married in Bells. So so he said, I'm willing to pay for my meal. So Amalei, so the Balasuda said, no, I'm not masking, you can't stay. So Amalei, so Bar Kamsa said, look, Yehivin Lach Demei Palga the Suda Sayach. You know, we'll make it a joint party, me and you, and I'll pay for half of the party. So Amalei, the Balabai said, no, even going 50-50, right? Sometimes you have, people are making a Suda together, and one party thinks they're being very generous by saying I'll have 50-50, and the other party's still unhappy, and they don't like the offer. They're not still not good. Everything is you know, some people will find problems no matter what. So Amalei, so Bar Kamsa said, okay, just come on, let me stay. I'll pay for the whole thing. So Amalei, lo, he said, no, I'm not maskim. I just, seeing you drives me crazy. I just don't want you here. Which is, again, it's a pegam in a person's midos. If, you know, look, you don't have to be best friends with everybody. You do have to love every Jew. Right? That is a mitzvah in the Torah. You do have to love every Jew. And part of loving every Jew is to not be so disgusted that it ruins your whole day when you see the person. That's the midah of Haman. That's the midah of Haman that calls in a shavli, that all the kavod and everything that he got was worthless to him because there's that one Jew that drove him crazy. There's that one person that drove him crazy. That's not a midah of Klal Yisrael. We're not supposed to be like that. We shouldn't let someone get under our skin to that point. And if someone does get under our skin to that point, it's not only their problem. It's not only because they're terrible. It's our problem. We have to find more love in our hearts. We have to find more things to see the positive. We have to figure out ways to look differently at that person and to feel a sense of love, to look at their positive qualities. Right? The Mishnah does not say that someone is a chacham who's lomed meirov adam, that learning from most people, lomed mikal adam. There's something positive about everybody. It's just a matter of what you accentuate, what you choose to, you know, it could be people even that you have like tremendous disagreements in hashkafa, in halacha, in derech hachaim, anything, they've hurt you, they've upset you, they've insulted you, this or that. It doesn't matter. They still have positive qualities, and therefore you look at them. There should be a sense of ahava, maybe caution. You know, if you know that they're out to hurt you. But still a sense of ahava, and shouldn't get to the point where it's just looking at you drives me crazy. I just can't have you here. It's going to shtar my whole simcha if I have to see you here. It's going to shtar my whole simcha if I have to see you here. I got a phone call like that this year. Someone said, not that if I'm there, they didn't want to tell me that. Probably is true about a few, but someone called me and said, how am I going to have this person at my simcha? It's going to shtar my whole simcha. If that person is there, they were invited from the other side. How could I have them there? that's not a problem with them. That's a problem with you. If it's going to shtar your whole simcha, if the other person is there, you have to be able to get over that. So not to be aday. So he picked him up bodily, and he stood him up. He lifted him off his seat and he chucked him. He threw him out of the party. So Bar Kamtza said to himself, after being unceremoniously thrown out, you know, which is not a good feeling, even if it's not your place and you don't get along, it's not a good feeling. I was just in a shul last week. This is not the same, but I was in a shul last week in Yerushalayim, and I davened in the Kol Olamos, in the NCSY Kol Olamos every day, except for one day they had a tiyul, so I davened in a shul in Yerushalayim. So I went into the shul, 7-8 minutes before davening started. I had my tefillos and tefillin on, so I could say brachos and karbanos, and because you know you're supposed to say that stuff. And you know I was just saying brachos audibly, but not like loudly, just you know like this, I guess. And a guy taps me on the shoulder. I turn around and he makes a motion like lower. Like I'm bothering him 7 minutes before the davening started, so I said what, and he just makes this motion. So I picked up my talis bag and I went to the other side of the shul. I'm not gonna not daven because this guy doesn't want to hear me, so I just went to the other side of the shul. And I figured, you know, I've never had to do this over here because I always have like my seat, right? So but like, you try to figure what's not a person's makom, like where are you safe that it's not a person's makom. So I figured there's a bench with 5 seats in it. Middle seat is definitely not anyone's makom, right? No one's going to make that their makom kavua. So I went straight to a middle seat. So someone taps me on the shoulder and says, that's the rav seat. I'm like, really? The middle seat in the second to last row of the shul is the rav seat? I don't know what kind of shul you're running over here. Is that like, that can't possibly be the rav seat. Well, okay, fine. So I picked up my talis bag. I went somewhere else. And then I saw this elderly Rav walk in, and he sat at the end seat, on the second to last, Rav. Because obviously the middle seat wasn't his seat. So it doesn't feel good. You don't feel good about that. Not that I'm bitter or anything. But, you know, I got to experience what that's like a little bit. That no one wants to be thrown out of a seat. No one wants to feel unwelcome, right? Meaning it's like, you know, you go through an experience like that, and you, one thing you're pretty sure about is that you're not going to go daven in that shul again, right? Meaning like, you don't want to feel like you don't belong. So Bar Kamtza was understandably upset. He was not happy about this, but he took out his anger maybe on the wrong people. Maybe he shouldn't have taken out his anger at all, and he should have just gotten past it and gone on with his day and not allowed it to ruin his day. But not only did he get angry, he took it out on the wrong people. Instead of taking it out on the Bala Suda, he said, "Hol v'aviyasvi rabbanon v'lamachu bei." Since the rabbanon were all there at the Suda, they saw exactly what happened, and they didn't make a macha. They didn't say anything. So it must be shemamina kanichluhu. It must be that they wanted me to suffer these bezeinus. It must be that they were happy about it, because if they weren't happy about it, they would have said something, which is always a dangerous assumption. Right? Meaning people always say, well, the rabbi was there when this happened, so it must be that he approves of it. Sometimes rabbanim pick their battles, because they have to pick their battles. And, not every time that something happens in proximity of a rabbi doesn't mean that the rabbi approves of it. But the truth is, it is a little bit of a kitrug on the rabbanim. Why, Taka, didn't they say anything? So the Marsha says, yeah, it's a terrible kitrug on the rabbanim that there was such a thing called chanufa, and there was chanfa to all the rishayim, that they, if the rasha was a rich guy, if he was a powerful guy, they just told him how great he was and how wonderful he was, and they never started up. They never did their job. They never gave any musr. They never set people straight. They never tried to encourage people to move in the right direction, and that's a problem. And they should have done something. The Chasam Sofer has a more charitable read of the Rabbanan. The Chasam Sofer says that they were down the kaf schus, that it must be that the Bala Suda had a really good reason to hate the guy. Because there is a halacha, the Gemara in Tan Ferek of Sachem says, that if you see a Dvar Erva b'yichidi b'chavero, if you're the only witness to your friend doing something, to another person doing something terrible, you're not allowed to be meyed against him. You can't testify against him. That's Stam Lashon Hara. That's one of the Lashon Hara Gemaras, right? The Chavetz Chaim was a Bal Meifes, because he made like Rebbe Shemayfsim, but that he made two whole Svarim out of a sugya that doesn't exist in Shas, pretty much. There's no Maseches Rosh Hashanah. There is a Maseches Rosh Hashanah. There's no Maseches Lashon Hara. So there's no Maseches Lashon Hara. So where do you have Lashon Hara? You have a couple of dapim in Maseches Arachin, and you have a couple of lines in Maseches Pesachim, and using all the Rishonim and all the Mefarshim that ever wrote about those few places in Shas, the Chavetz Chaim made two whole Svarim out of it. So one of those Gemaras is that if you see Dvar Erva B'Yechidi, you're not allowed to come and be made, because it's Tam Lashon Hara. The Beis is not allowed to believe you, because you're only in Eina Echad. So you're not allowed to be made. But the Gemara says mitzvah l'sanoso, that you're allowed to have sinah toward that person. So the Chasam Sofer says maybe that's what the Rabbanan assumed. They were down the kav schus of the Bal Suda, that he must have seen a dvar erva b'chavero, and therefore he was fulfilling his mitzvah l'sanoso. So but Bar Kamtz's impression, regardless of whether the Rabbanan were right or wrong, and regardless of what the Rabbanan's motivation was, that the Rabbanan are totally happy with this person acting like a stingy and not nice person. So Ezel Echelbu Kurtza Be Malka. So I'm going to go and I'm going to be malshin them to the Beis HaMelech. There's a big question we showed them what the expression of Echelbu Kurtza is. Are you going to feed him Kurtza? What is Kurtza? What are you feeding? It's difficult to understand exactly. But one thing is that the Lashon of Kurtza, Rashi writes in on Chumash, that is like Kritza Seinayim, that there's that sometimes when people just signal to each other, you know, they make eyes to each other, they know, like sometimes if a couple's been married for a long time, they already know exactly, know each other's cues, and they know how to you know, pick up without total nonverbal communication. The wife shoots the husband a look, and he knows, stop that line of conversation. Whatever you're about to say, you're about to walk on a landmine, and he knows to stop. Very often, husbands have no clue, and the wife shoots a look, and he completely misses it. But a lot of times, there's this nonverbal communication. I was just Menachem Avil, my chavrusa, Rebbe Rasner, Shlita, and he told me that once his mother passed away last week, and he told me that once his parents were walking in Far Rockaway in the old days, and a mugger came toward them. It used to be Maisim B'chol Yom in Far Rockaway. So he said his father gave his mother a look. Not a word was said between them. His mother quickly slipped off a ring, dropped it in the grass. His father, he said, always carry two wallets with him. The mugger asked for his wallet. He gave him the wallet that had a couple of dollars and a canceled credit card. And the mugger said, thank you very much, and went away. She picked up the ring from the grass, and like they just threw this nonverbal communication. They knew exactly, it was like a drill, you know, like a rehearsed drill of how to do it. So that's kritzas einayim, is that sometimes that you're able to just, you know, make a look. A lot of times people think, I didn't speak Lashon Hara, but an eye roll, someone makes a comment, and the look that you give that you give to other people when that person says something or does something is also Lashon Hara. That's also something. We have one of the Al-Khaits for that. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's also something. That's also problematic. You know, about tefillah that you don't love gets up to daven and or botches a tune or something, and you know, you look across the room and you know, and give a look to your friend. That's also lashon hara. That's also not appropriate. Certainly in a shul, the Chafetz Chaim writes in the Mishnah Berurah, and in the Chafetz Chaim, but he even writes it in the Mishnah Berurah, that as much as there's an isser of lashon hara, an isser of machlokas, an isser of all these things, those isurim are magnified in a makom kadosh. And they're magnified at a Shas Kedusha. So, like, the worst time to have those things is on Shabbos and in Shul. Right? Those are the worst times to have those kinds of things. But anyway, so Ezel Kortza Beimalka might relate to that. That it's that sometimes you're malshin just by Kritza Seinayim, just like something like that. But unclear why, how that fits into this particular story, because L'chora, he did more than that, meaning he spoke very directly to the Melech. So anyway, so Azal Amrle L'Kesar, he went and he told the Kesar, Mardubach Yehudai, that the Jewish people rebelled against you. So Amrle, the Kesar said, Mi Yemar, why should I believe you? Which is a Chiddush in its own right. Throughout history, that's pretty much all the governments that we were subjugated under needed to hear a rumor. Someone said it on Facebook, or that the Jewish people are this or that, and it's automatically, it's on Facebook, it must be true, or whatever. The Palestinians said it, so it must be true. So it must be that. But Kesar, to his credit, said, "Why should I believe you? Why should I believe you that the Yehudim are worried against me?" So Amrle, so Bar Kamtza said to Kesar, Shadalu Karbana, why don't you send a karban? And you'll see if they're going to be makriv your karban. If they're not makriv your karban, then it's a raya that I'm right. Now, normally the halacha is that a guy is allowed to send karbanos. A guy is noder nedarmu nedavos, just like a Yisrael. The Gemara darshans it from a pasuk. Pasuk says, Ishish mi beis Yisrael min agera garbi Yisrael asher yakriv karbano. So if they're not makriv the carbon, then it's going to be a raya that they don't like you, because Goy is allowed to be makriv a carbon. We have to realize that the Beis HaMikdash is Beis Tfilihi L'chal Ha'amin. It's not only for the Jewish people, meaning the loss of the Beis HaMikdash that we're mourning today is not only a loss for Klal Yisrael. I mean, it's a terrible loss for Klal Yisrael. It's the biggest loss for Klal Yisrael. But it's a loss for mankind. It's a loss for humanity. Everybody has to have a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Everybody has to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's up to us to be misabel over it, because no one else is going to be misabel over it, right? Certainly, even though it's a loss to all of humanity, the rest of humanity is not going to, even if they knew about it, no one knows about it. No one knows what Tisha B'Av is outside of the Jewish people. But even if they did know about it, it wouldn't make sense to them to be misabel, because we barely know what we lost. But it's a loss for everybody. It's a loss for all of humanity. They don't have the ability to be makrav karbanos now either. So azul shadu biyade iglatilta. So the keser sent an iglatilta to which is the choicest animal, which is a question rishonim. What makes it the choicest animal? What does it mean exactly? So some say it means the third born animal from the mother, because when the animal starts birthing, it's first born. It's not yet the animal itself. The mother is not yet fully at full strength, and by the time it's giving birth to its later offspring, it's already old and not able to produce such strong offspring. So it must be that it's the third one is the most meshubach. Others say no, tilta means that it's one third grown of its final growth. Others say no, tilta is just a lashon. It means that it's really good. It just means that it's good stuff. There are rayas, you know, why it can't be one reason or, you know, one explanation or the other. But those are the possibilities of what it is. But either way, he sent a really nice carbon. He didn't send something schlocky. So Bahadi Dikasi Shadabe Muma. So while they were bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash, Bar Kamsa put a mum benivs vasayim in the upper lip of the animal. V'amrila bedukin shaba'ayin. And some say that he put the mum in the dukin shaba'ayin. So that's a little difficult to understand what that means, because dukin shaba'ayin typically means like the layer of that's over the animal's eyeball, meaning it's not an eyelid. It's something in the eye. So it's hard to imagine how he put a mum in the dukin. Meaning dukin shaba'ayin itself is a mum. It's like a cataract. It's like something that's actually a growth over the eye. So the Dukin Shabayin is a mum. So what does it mean? He was matil mum on the Dukin Shabayin. So that's a question in the Achron, what exactly this means over here, that he put a mum on the Dukin Shabayin. But some say it must mean over here that it's the Afapai. It must be that it's an eyelid. So whatever it is, he put a mum there. The point is that it's a place that the Jewish people would consider a mum, and therefore you're not allowed to bring carbon like that on the Mizbeach. But the two lav mumahu, but Goyim would not consider such a thing to be a mum, because it's not mechusar ever. And by Goyim, the only mum is that which is mechusar ever. It's like a bird, right? An oaf doesn't have any din of mum, and it only has din of mechusar ever. So by a behema of a guy, even the only thing they would consider a mum is that which is mechusar ever. The obviously every line of Agadita and every word in Agadita is dafka, right? Meaning, why would he dafka put the mum in those places? So the Marsha explains that the upper lip is because of lashon hara, that it's a mum benifs v'sayim, that our downfall is going to come about through our misuse of our lips, through the misuse of our mouths. And here it wasn't even lashon hara over here; it was anas tavarim. He yelled at him and he embarrassed him publicly. He said hurtful things to him at the Suda. The Baal Suda said hurtful things to the other person. Sometimes a person has to be mindful that Onas Devarim could sometimes be more damaging than Lashon Hara. And Dukin Shabayim is because there are those people that are Tzarei Ayin. There are those people that that just are somewhat stingy, the way they look at other people, the way they treat other people. They're not generous with their time, with their talents, with their ability to help, with their money, with anything that could help other people. They're just stingy toward other people. Now, the Maral has a deeper take on all of this, and he says that the Umos HaOlam are more based in physicality, in Guf and Chomer, and Klal Yisrael is more Ruchani. We're more based in Ruchnius, at least we used to be. And when the Guf of the Karban is complete, so it's Ra'i La'akrava. A mum in the Dukan Shabbat Ayin is not going to pass off the Karban Me'akrava, because the Ayin is something that's It's got a koach that's not purely physical, meaning you can't sense automatically that the animal is able to see you. Meaning the ability of the eye to see you could see size and weight and, you know, height and things like that. That's like, that's very chumri, that's very physical right in front of you. But the ayin is a little bit nivdal min aguf, right? The ayin, through looking at someone's eyes, you could see a lot more than the guf, and the person's capabilities through their eyes is a lot more than the guf. And svasayim, certainly for a human being, svasayim is the ability to speak, which is what separates us from animals. So it could be that it represents that which makes klali, meaning that's why for the umos ha'olam it's not a mum, but for klali Yisrael, these things would be considered a mum because of who we are, that we are meant to be a people that is more ruchnius oriented, you know, where we live our lives based on ruchnius and not on gashmius, which is something that is always worthy of contemplating and thinking about, you know, whether our relationship to gashmius is a healthy relationship. You know, I was just in Eretz Yisrael, and a lot of times, you know, that jumps out at you when you're in Eretz Yisrael, that our relationship to gashmius maybe is not the healthiest. You know, that maybe we're a little too connected to our gashmius, which is not what we're meant to be. It's not who we're supposed to be. One of my wife's friends was telling her, every time I go to America, like, people's bathrooms are like nicer than my kitchen, and like, you know, it's just, that's just the way we live. We live with a certain very, very strong connection to gashmius, and you know, when we contemplate the loss of the Beis HaMikdash, we're really contemplating the loss of Kedusha, and loss of Kedusha means just like a natural connection to Kedusha, where like the pull is toward Ruchnius, where we feel more naturally connected to Ruchnius, where it's just the environment lends itself to Ruchnius. You know, to the extent that we achieve in Ruchnius, when we're in America, where it's countercultural. Right? Whatever we accomplish is swimming against the tide. We're going up the down escalator, whatever you want to call it. But I was talking to a friend. I had lunch at a friend last Shabbos, and he said, he lives in Shari Chesed. He said, within 3-minute walk of my house, I have 5 Neitz Minyanim every day. Like, how can you not be like a religious Jew in like such an environment? Like, all of your neighbors are davening Neitz every day. You know, like that's, it's just, so of course, he davens Neitz every day and he learns for 3 hours afterward. You know, it's just like everything lends itself to Ruchnius. Rabbi Reisman told my Talmidim, when I brought them to him a few weeks ago, I don't remember if I mentioned this or not, he said that that there's just something about how Eretz Yisrael lends itself to the life of a Jew. He said he was staying in Arzei Abira, and he went to Maariv on Shabbos, on Matzai Shabbos, and his wife was having Shalashudis by a friend. So after Maariv, he went to pick up his wife from her friend, you know, from the Shalashudis. She was at the friend's apartment, and he saw that the friend's husband was still there. So he said to the guy, "You missed Maariv." Like, "You missed Maariv." He said, "Yeah, it was Matzai Shabbos." He said, I'll get Maariv in another half hour, an hour, you know. So Reisman said it struck him, like, okay, there are people that keep Rabbeinu Tam, yeah? So maybe you'll find the Maariv Minyan that's Rabbeinu Tam. 1 minute after Rabbeinu Tam, will you find the Maariv Minyan on Matzai Shabbos? Now, if you're looking for a Maariv Minyan at 11 p.m. on Matzai Shabbos, it doesn't matter where you are, you're never going to find a Maariv Minyan. Yeah, but no one's in a rush over there. Everyone's happy to keep going at Shabbos for a long time. And you go to the Grashul, and there will still be Maariv Minyanim at 10 o'clock, at 10:30, 11 o'clock. I'm going to say Shabbos. It just lends itself to more Kedusha. It's just something that our environment is such that it just doesn't fit as seamlessly. A life of Kedusha doesn't fit as seamlessly. Anyway, so he put a mum in this animal. Back to our story over here. So he put a mum in the animal, and it was something that the Jewish people considered a mum, but the melech would never have realized that it's a mum. So some Rabbanu Lekruve, the Rabbanu thought we better be makar of this carbon, Mishum Shlom Malchus, because Shlom Malchus is at stake. You know, the Magen Avraham brings a raya from here that you're allowed to violate Elosase because of Emas HaMalchus, that they were afraid of the Malchus. Prim Gadol says, no, it's only if it's a Savi Pekuach Nefesh, not just Stam Emas HaMalchus, but that's a real thing, right? Meaning doing what we can in order to make sure that that we have a good relationship with the Malchus is a very important thing. You know, political activism sometimes has a bad name to it. And we think, yeah, well, I don't want to be involved in politics. And, you know, I really don't want to be involved in politics, but we need people who are. We need people who are going to be involved and who are going to make sure that there's Shlomo Malchus, that there are relationships with, you know, with the people in charge, whether we like those people or not. It's we really need to keep friends in high places. So it's a Shlomo Malchus is a very important thing. We were ready to violate an Isser. The Rabbanim were ready to be makriv a karban that is a bal mum. So Amar Rabbi Zechariah ben Akulis, Rabbi Zechariah ben Akulis said, Yomru bali mum krev l'gabim mizbech. No, we can't do that because everyone's going to think that bali mum could be brought on the mizbech, and that's not true. You're not allowed to bring a bal mum on the mizbech, which is interesting. The Achronim point out, Rav Chanan points out that for to violate the Isser of bringing a Baal Mum on the Mizbeach is Nisa Daraisa. Right? So that, he was maskin, that Mishum Shlomo Malchus, you're allowed to do that. But what was he concerned? That by doing that, I'm going to make my own Gzeira Derabanan. That by doing that, people might think that you're allowed to bring a Baal Mum on the Mizbeach. So the Daraisa, he was willing to violate Mishum Shlomo Malchus. But for Shlomo Malchus, he wouldn't violate his own Gzeira Derabanan that he just made up on the spot. Meaning he just said, if we do that, then people are going to think you're allowed to do that. That's a Din Derabanan that he just made up. So Rav Chanan said that by every Lav D'Oraisa, where it's an issue of Pikuach Nefesh, there's no issue. It's hutra, it's totally mutter for Pikuach Nefesh. But if people derive from there that you could bring a Baal Mum, even Shalom B'Makom Pikuach Nefesh, then it might yield an actual issur. Because in a time when there's not pikuach nefesh, people will think you can bring a bal mum, and that will be an actual issur. So in the here and now, it's not that you're violating the issur d'oraisa, you're doing nothing. It's pikuach nefesh, and therefore you're allowed to do it. But he was nervous that an actual issur might be violated in the future based on this. So they said, okay, so we have to reassess our options. If we can't be makrav, what should we do? So savar l'miktale. They thought maybe we have to kill Bar Kamtza de Lelez of Olema so that he shouldn't go back and tell the Kesar that we didn't bring his karban. So Amalu Rabbi Zechariah, Rabbi Zechariah said, no, can't do that either, because Yomru Matal Mum B'Kachim Yeharek, that people are going to think that if you're Matal Mum and Kachim, that you're Chayiv Misa, and that's not true. The halacha is that you're not allowed to be Matal Mum B'Kachim, but you're not Chayiv Misa. So he wouldn't allow them to do either of the solutions that could have taken care of the problem, which the whole thing is interesting, meaning that they would have killed Bar Kamtza over this. You have to understand, if they would have killed Bar Kamtza, it means that they viewed this as a real pikuach nefesh type of situation. If they were willing to kill him, meaning. What was he nervous? He was nervous that people are going to say that Bali Mumim Makrevim Al Gabe Mizbeach. So I'll kill a person rather than do that. You know, but obviously the one of the Achronim points out, which is worse, you know, Chora, it's much worse to kill a person than to, meaning Eitza number two shouldn't have been any better than Eitza number one. Killing a person is much worse than the chance that someone will say Bali Mumim Makrevim Al Gabe Mizbeach. Elamai, they got these sense that Bar Kamtza wasn't going to stop at this. You know, a lot of times you have someone who, you know, who's out to get the Jewish people, who's out to, or an individual person. He's out to attack an individual person, and somehow we got past the attack. But some people, you realize that was just their first shot. You know, they're not going to stop. They're going to keep coming at you. So that's why. One of the Achronim points out, the only other Eitza was to kill him, because it wasn't about this. Because if it wasn't this, it was going to be the next thing. But anyway, based on this Eitza, Samar Rabbi Yochanan, Vasnusa, Shlavi Zechari ben Avkulas, Achrives, Beseinu, Vesarfa, Seichalena, Viglisana, Meiratzenu. That it was the Anivus, Rabbi Zechari ben Avkulas, that caused the entire Churban. So this is the famous comment of the Maritz Chayis. The Maritz Chayis says, why is it called the Anivus, Rabbi Zechari ben Avkulas? Because he was obviously a big anav, because Menadin, they could have brought the carbon as a balmum, because it was sakana for Klal Yisrael, and min adin they could have killed Bar Kamsa because he was a rodef on Klal Yisrael, and Allah is habala hargachash kem lahargal, and Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulus knew all of that, but because he was too humble, he was too gun shy, I'm going to give such a hurrah, I'm going to pass in such a din. Now, a lot of times we need our poskim to be confident. We need our poskim to be assertive. We need them to be strong. Remember, Shechter once said that he doesn't like when poskim use the phrase la'anias daiti in paskening halacha. So psak halacha can't be mea anias hadas. Psak halacha has to be mea shiras hadas. If you think it's only an anias hadas, then don't paskin. You say anias das, you know, when you're talking and learning, when you say, okay, good, that's where you should have all the anivas of the anias hadas. But psak halacha, one has to be assertive, one has to be strong, and this is the misplaced anivus of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas. I think this is one of the only places, if I recall correctly, Rav Moshe quotes this Maritz Chayis. Rav Moshe doesn't quote too many Maritz Chayis on Shas, but he quotes this Maritz Chayis, that the anivus is the person has to know when he's called upon to paskin, and it's not a proper anivus. You know, Rav Moshe was challenged, why do you think you can paskin as a tshuva, where someone asked him, why do you think you're allowed to paskin against Rabbi Kiveger, against the Chasam Sofer, these were Gedolei Olam from hundreds of years ago, how can you paskin against them? So he explained that this is the job of a Chacham B'chol Dor V'Dor, to paskin the halacha as they see it, even if it's against, he said, I don't think I'm greater than the Neid B'Yehuda and the Chasam Sofer and Rabbi Kiveger. I don't think I'm any greater than any of them. And Adrabah, Yiridas Hadoros, I'm nowhere near their Madrega. But a Chacham has to paskin the way he sees it. And not doing so is the wrong kind of anivus. It's the kind of anivus that destroyed our Beis HaMikdash. And it's true, there are issues nowadays that we feel like we're just out of our depth, out of our element. Like we can't. You know, Rav Asher Weiss has said on many occasions, I heard him say, some of the shailas that come up today, we need a Rashba to paskin. We need the Rashba to come back in our generation to paskin. He said, Elamai, we don't have a Rashba. So someone's got to paskin them. So we need to deal with these shailas, even though we feel inadequate in paskining these shailas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, Lo Alman Yisrael, and, in every generation, we always think the last gedolim were the gedolim of the previous generation, or the gedolim that we just lost, were the last of the gedolim, and that there are no gedolim anymore, and that there's no one that can paskin anymore. But we believe yiftach bedoro kishmul bedoro, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of Klal Yisrael, and dor dor v'dor shav, that each and every generation has its own leadership, and the leadership that's meant for that generation, that's uniquely suited for that generation. And yes, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to drop a neshama into the world that defies Yiridas HaDoros, and that brings us back a couple of hundred years, you know, in order to pull that generation through. Right? The Ribbono Shel Olam did that by dropping a Vilna Gaon into the period of the Achronim. You know, a brain and neshama of a Rishon came in the period of the Achronim to help us through. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam to do that. The Ribbono Shel Olam can do that. But the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he does when he sees fit. So it's not up to us to say that we just don't have, that we don't have anyone to paskin. We do have. We have who the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us, and those are the people that we have to trust. I was talking to a Talmud Chacham recently, and he said that there are no gedolim anymore in America. You can't say that. You're not allowed to say that. Ribbono Shel Olam gave us gedolim, and we have to rely on the gedolim that we have, and those gedolim have to realize that they have to paskin, that they have to be the ones. And nivus of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulus destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. You can't be shy about a psak halacha when everyone's looking to you for a psak halacha. So shadu levayil nirim kesar. So the Gemara says, here's what happened because of this. When Kesar saw that the Jewish people weren't makriv his karban, so he sent Niron Kesar to go fight a war with them. That was his lieutenant, or general, whatever, who took care of the dirty work for him. The Roman king was called a Kesar, and the other the other sarim in his cabinet or in his military had different titles with the name Kesar in it. So there's Niron Kesar, there's Poseidon's Kesar, and each one is based on what their tafkid was, what their appointment was. But everything, you know, one was the general, one was the treasurer, one was the advisor, you know, but each one is called Kesar. So that's why Niron Kesar. So he sent Niron Kesar to go wage war against the Jewish people. So Kika Asi, when Niron Kesar got to Yerushalayim, he wanted to see if he was really supposed to fight this battle. So Shadagira leMizrach Asav Nafal Yerushalayim. He shot an arrow toward the east, and it landed in Yerushalayim. LeMarav Asav Nafal Yerushalayim. He shot an arrow to the west, and it landed in Yerushalayim. LaBaruchas Hashemayim Asav Nafal Yerushalayim. He shot an arrow in all four directions, and they all landed in Yerushalayim. That's obviously miraculous. Yerushalayim was only on one side of him, so if he's shooting arrows in all directions, these arrows are boomeranging around or going in. You know, they're like guided missiles. They're going in different. They're all going. Toward the same place. So that's very unusual. In fact, the Achronim are bothered. Why did he shoot the one in the direction of Yerushalayim? Meaning the one in the direction of Yerushalayim, that's not even miraculous. That, of course that's going to go toward Yerushalayim. So they say, no. Either they say he was at an angle, so none of them should have gone to Yerushalayim. You know, it was a 45-degree angle, and they all should have missed Yerushalayim. Or he was so far from Yerushalayim that none of them should have ended up in Yerushalayim. Just the fact that they made it there. I mean, it could be that they made it in Yerushalayim and going around the world and getting to Yerushalayim and going over the globe and going to Yerushalayim. I remember when we were building, before we started building the shul, I met with an architect who was trying to convince me that we can't build a shul facing Mizrach. He said the only way to make it practical is to face Tzafon. To face Tzafon. Which doesn't make any sense. I don't know why that would have been practical. North is that way, right? So I don't know why that would have made sense, but that's what he was telling me. And he said, I'm telling you the halacha is you're supposed to face that way anyway, because when you take a plane, sometimes it goes over the North Pole, and that's how you get to Yerushalayim. So you can go that way also. You do the architecting, I'll do the halacha. You know, we face Mizrach, that's halacha, you face Mizrach. So he shot the arrow in all these directions. They all ended up in Yerushalayim. So Amalei Liyanuka Psotli Psukech. So Niron Kesar saw that this was, it seemed to be a simon that all arrows are pointing toward Yerushalayim in a very literal way. So he said to a child, Psotli Psukech, that the Gemara tells us that Kodesh Baruch Hu took the nevuah from the Nevi'im and gave it to the children. That children say things and they're being misnabe by saying things. We don't even know what, they don't even realize what they're saying. So he says, Psokli Psukech. So Amalei, so the child said, here's the Pasuk. V'nasati es nekmasi be'edom b'yad ami Yisrael. Now Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to take revenge against Edom because of what Edom does to Klal Yisrael. So basically, what Niron Kesar heard was, you're going to go and destroy Klal Yisrael, and then Hashem is going to destroy you. Because Hashem is not going to let the person who decides to be the Shaliach to cause tzaras to Klal Yisrael just get off scot-free. You're going to be in real trouble for doing this. So he understood that that he'd be successful in the war, but that then Hashem would be after him. So Amar, Kutcher Bruchu by Lechruve Beisei. So he took the sim, and he said, Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to destroy his Beis HaMikdash. And he wants to cleanse himself of the aveira, of doing that, of destroying the Beis HaMikdash by killing me, by punishing me. So he said, I don't want to be part of that. Why should I be the shliach l'dvar aveira, so to speak? So Aruch Azali Gayer, he went and he was Megayer v'nafik minei Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir was a descendant of his, which is just startling. Meaning that he was willing. Meaning he knew Yerushalayim was going to fall. He jumped on a sinking ship. He jumped on a sinking ship. He knew that Klal Yisrael was about to fall. He knew he wasn't the last shliach of the Kesar, and he knew that this was in the works, that this is what Kodesh Baruch Hu was going to do. But he was Megayer anyway, because he jumped on a sinking ship, but he knew that eternally Klal Yisrael is always going to be there. You know, the miracle of the eternal survival of the Jewish people is something that's real. And that's a halacha. When a person is megayer, you have to tell them, that there's anti-Semitism, people are going to hate you, and, you're going to suffer for being a Jew. And he has to say, I understand that, and afal pi kein, I want to be megayer, and only then, only if he says he understands that, only then are we megayer the person. So this is really a heroic act of this this Neron Kesar by being Megayer. That's why he was Zocha to have a descendant like Rabbi Meir. The Ben Yoyada writes that he was Zocha to have Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is a very big Talmud Chacham, obviously. He was one of the Holy Tanaim. And not only one of the Holy Tanaim, the Gemara says that he had such sharp intellect that a lot of times we couldn't be Omer al Daita, we couldn't even understand. The Gedolei HaTanaim couldn't even understand the full, you know, process of his logic and figuring things out. And he was Zocha to this because of the great kavod that he had for Torah. Meaning, what happened? Someone said a pasuk. A child said a pasuk. And that was so impactful on him. Look at the kavod that he just had for Torah. Kavod HaTorah yields descendants for Talmidei Chachamim. A lot of people think being a Talmud Chacham yields descendants of Talmud Chacham. Love Dafka. Kavod HaTorah yields descendants of Talmud Chacham. As Rav Eliashiv has that beautiful vort in his Ha'aros on Shas, that at every Siyum Masechta, the Stama people here were at Siyumim this week. This is the first year I didn't go to a Siyum the whole week. Well, I was at one Siyum. I didn't eat Fleishiks all week, but I was at one Siyum. The NCSY call options for Fleishig, so I'll just go with milk. Yogurt is fine, but at a Siyum we mentioned all the sons of Rav Papa. So Rav Eliashiv points out that Rav Papa had all these banim Talmidei Chachamim. How do you have 10 children who are all Talmidei Chachamim? So Rav Eliashiv points out you find throughout Shas a few times in Maseches Brachos where there's a machlokas between one Amora and another, and Rav Papa says we paskin like Amora A in this situation and Amora B in this situation. So he always makes it that every shita gets a say. So he had such covenant of Talmidei Chachamim, says Rav Eliashiv. It's not because Rav Papa himself was a Talmid Chacham, that's true too, but that's not why he was Zochet to children of Talmidei Chachamim. It's that he wanted to make sure that every Talmid Chacham got their due, that every Talmid Chacham got the respect that they deserved, and through that he had Banim that were Talmidei Chachamim. Having covered for Talmidei Chacham. So sometimes, you know, the Torah doesn't go down by Yerusha. I think Binyamin Pam told me many times that his father, after his grandfather passed away, told all the children, you have no entitlements. You have achrayus, but you have no entitlements just because your grandfather was a Gadol Hadar. It doesn't happen automatic. It doesn't go down by Yerusha necessarily. It's something that a person has to work for, and it's something that parents have to daven for their children to be successful in learning. Sometimes that's a missing ingredient. A lot of times people call me and they ask for Eitzah, you know, and this, that, or the other thing. I always try to remember to say at some point in the conversation, and you also have to daven for it, because you always have to daven for it. Whatever you want to achieve, you have to daven for it. It was a beautiful maisa that happened this year. Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg brought a group of balabatim to New York to meet with different rabbanim, because there aren't so many gedolei harabbanim in Florida. It's not as large a Jewish community as New York. And so he met with different senior rabbanim in the area. So I told him, you have to meet with Rabbi Reisman. He said, I bring my talmidim every year. He's just out of this world. You have to meet with him. So he said, okay, so connect me with him. So I connected him, and they went to meet with him. And then he sent me the recording afterwards. And that recording changed my life in so many ways, I can't even tell you. I mean, I can tell you, but I'm not going to right now. But in one of the things he said, they had a question and answer, and one of the guys that was on the trip was a Baal Tshuva. Now you could tell by the way he's speaking that he wasn't a native to, you know, to speaking the sprach of a yeshiva man. So he said, you know, I have a hard time. I was actually just in Or Sameach this past week at Rabbi Breidowitz's Q&A, and someone asked the same question. Or Sameach, you get the Baal Tshuva questions, and someone asked the same question. He said, I have a hard time saying all the words in davening, keeping up. How do I, you know, am I doing something wrong? I'm trying my best. Like, what should I do? I just can't say all those words as fast as all the shuls seem to say all the words. So, you know, both Rabbi Reisman and Rabbi Breidowitz were classy enough not to say, I'll tell you a secret, nobody can say all the words at the speed that the shuls are probably saying that. You know, neither of them said that, although they were probably both thinking it. So Rabbi Reisman said, you're 100% right, you're doing the right thing, and you should keep davening the way you're davening, and don't worry about that at all. And Rabbi Breidowitz said essentially the same thing. Rabbi Breidowitz added that there's a great Gaon in New York, Rav Herschel Schechter, and I heard from his own mouth that he said that he never says the whole long Tachnun on Mondays and Thursdays. That he only says parts of it, which Rav Schechter, of course, has told us many times. He said he's never, if you ever daven in the minyan that he's davening, you'd have time to say it twice. But he's never said the whole long Tachnun. That's why I don't say the whole long Tachnun. I try to say two-thirds of it, different thirds of it each time. And even that, usually is not, everyone's like waiting. I try to read as fast as I can, but whatever. So what happens? So Reisman said, you're doing right. You're doing the good thing. This is what you're supposed to do. And then afterwards, the guy, the Baal Tshuva, had his son with him. And his son looks like mamish, like this, the chain of a ben yeshiva. Sometimes you have like a ben yeshiva that not only looks like a ben yeshiva, but like has this special chain that only a ben yeshiva who's really like learning seriously and is like so sincere. And he had the son with him. And he said afterwards, he introduced him to Rabbi Reisman. He said, this is my son. So Rabbi Reisman said, you see, I told you you're davening properly. I told you you're davening properly. This is the result of your tefillos. And it was just a quick comment, but it gave such chizik to that person. So we always have to daven. We always have to daven that our children should be okay. We always do daven that our children should be okay. It's just we have to define okay the proper way also. So this fellow was zocha that his children Rav Meir was a descendant. It's a discussion whether a descendant or a direct son. Was Rav Meir actually a Ben Hager? Rav Meir was called Meir because he was Meir Reini Yisrael Bahalacha. He lit up the eyes of the Jewish people with Halacha. But there's a discussion whether Rav Meir was actually the son of a Ger or just a descendant of this guy. But either way, it's pretty impressive. So when the Kesar saw that Niron Kesar didn't fulfill his tafkid, so Shadu Ilavelus Poseidon's Kesar. So instead he sent somebody else. He sent us Poseidon's Kesar to wage the war. So Poseidon's Kesar made a three-year siege around Yerushalayim. It's hard to imagine. Can you imagine living under siege for 3 years? Meaning there's this constant threat. Around Yerushalayim for 3 years, so of course we can imagine it because since 1948, Klal Yisrael has been surrounded by billions of enemies, and the post can point out la halacha that Eretz Yisrael since 1948 has been b'shas melchama. It hasn't always been active melchama. That's just because our enemies are rearming and figuring things out. But it's figuring out what their next attack is going to be. But it's always a shas melchama. So the Maral sees something deeper over here, that everything about Klal Yisrael is meshulash, and the only way to defeat Klal Yisrael is in a group of three. We have three avos, we have three types of Jews, Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim. We're called the Gemara in Shabbos Peches, which is the Kabbalah Satorah Gemara, calls us an Am Tlisai. We're a nation of thirds. So the Goyim knew that it was going to take 3 years to be able to overpower us. So that's others point to a Gemara in Maseches Sota. The Gemara says when it talks about a Sota drinking the Mehamarim and how it causes her to explode. So the Mishnah says that she could have a Zuchus Tola, that sometimes she's not going to implode, not explode, she's not going to implode right away. Because she has some sort of zechus. The Gemara talks about maybe the zechus of Talmud Torah she could have, and that's the sugya about women in Talmud Torah, right? Because what do you mean she has a zechus of Torah if women are not chayav in Talmud Torah? So, okay, different possibilities. But the Gemara over there says that sometimes you have a zechus that's tola shana achas, and sometimes you have a zechus that's tola shtei shanim, and sometimes you have a zechus that's tola shalosh shanim. But beyond that, we don't have. So it took 3 years of laying siege to Yerushalayim until the Zechuyos ran out, because we no longer had 3 years We had 3 years worth of zechiyos to protect us, and we're going to see soon, because there were three people who did a remarkable chesed with their money in order to keep us going. Savba Hanut Fasa TV. There were these three rich people, and their names were Nakdimun ben Goryon, ben Kalbasavua, ben Tzitzis HaKeses. Those were the names of the three people. So the Gemara elaborates on each of their names. Nakdimun ben Goryon was called that. It wasn't his actual name when he was born. His name was Boni. It wasn't Nakdimon, but he was called Nakdimon ben Goryon Shenoktolo Chama Bavuro, because there's a famous story in Maseches Tainis where the sun stopped in the sky and didn't continue its descent under the horizon on account of him. The sun doesn't move the earth, but the point is that whatever, the earth stopped moving. We didn't see a sunset on account of him. Well, that was the story in Tainus where he borrowed 12 mayanos of mayim for the elderly regalim, and he had up until, because it hadn't rained enough that year, and he had up until a certain day to return them full. And when it seemed like it was already shkia that day, the guy said, "You owe me all this money." And he said, "No, the day's not over yet." And it was a cloudy day, and they couldn't see. And he davened, and then right afterwards it rained after the person who lent it to him thought the day was over already. And he said, "Oh, it rained too late. You missed out. You owe me all the money." So he davened that the clouds should disperse, and there was the sun. It was still up. So you looked in the on the board, and it said that Shkia was going to be at whatever, at 8:04, and it turned out that Shkia that night was 9:04, and it rained between 8:04 and 9:04, and that was the sun stopped for him. There are a few people that the sun stopped for, so he was one of them. Ben Kalbusavua, why was he called Ben Kalbusavua? She called Nicholas the basic Shurav Kakelev Yotzik Shusaveya, that anyone who came into his house hungry like a dog left when they were satiated. Which is Maila, that he was always feeding people, not just feeding his friends who came in not hungry to begin with. A lot of times, it's a nice thing that people have friends over and that they make relationships, and that's a good thing, and that should always continue. But that's not really Hachnasas Orchim. Hachnasas Orchim is that there are people who need somewhere to go. And you bring such people into your house, that's really the mitzvah of Hachnasas Orchim. When you just hang out with your friends, that's good. That's Avas Yisrael. It's good. It's good to love other Jews, and it's good to have relationships with other Jews. But Hachnasas Orchim is that someone comes in hungry like a dog, and then you feed them, and you make sure that they're taken care of. It's a little bit of a funny expression, hungry like a dog. But they say that the dogs apparently don't, I don't know if this is true. I'm not a dog person, but some of the Achronim probably weren't dog people either. Dogs don't eat that much. They only eat every 3 days or something. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be what actually happens. But okay. So, and Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, he was called Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, he said, Tzitziso Negreres Al Gabi Kistos, that his tzitzis dragged along ksasos, not on the ground, but they had like special cushions as he was walking. He had these long tzitzis, like sometimes you see these guys come back from yeshiva, so like they measure their frumkeit by how long their tzitzis is, so the tzitzis goes all the way down to the ground. So he had these long tzitzis, but he was respectful that they shouldn't drag on the ground. They were on top of a cushion. And Ikadamri, some say, no, it has nothing to do with his tzitzis, and it has nothing to do with cushions under his tzitzis, but rather, Shaysa Kisto Mutalis Ben Gedoli Romi, that he was a very chashuva person, that his seat was amongst, he had a seat at the table amongst the Gedoli Romi. So we had an important person in a very high place in Rome. Throughout history, the Jewish people benefited from people in high places. It's like amazing that as the Inquisition was happening, the Abarbanel was like was literally in a meeting with Ferdinand and Isabella and trying to convince them not to throw the Jewish people out, and was this close to doing it when someone else came in. And Abarbanel writes this whole maisa. He writes the whole story about how he was this close to convincing them not to expel all the Jews from Spain, and then someone else came in and agitated them, and she was a particular machshefa, and she didn't want to hear it. So the Abarbanel was given the right to stay, He said, you're a chashuv person, we need you here. And he said, no, my lot is with the Jewish people. And he went into Galus also. A lot of people, when they fled Spain by the Inquisition, they went on these boats. These boats, half of them capsized. You know, they don't realize how uncertain things were for people. They're running all over the place, different countries that were foreign to them. This is the story of the Jewish people. Even the golden years of Spain were not the golden years of Spain. It was nothing. It was never really good for us there. They were never... You know, the Catholic Church was throughout history has not been a friend of the Jews. Throughout history, but it's also interesting. It says that it's tzitziso negreris al gavei ksasos, which sounds like that the other option would have been that it would be dragging on the ground. The mechaber pasul shulchan aruch that you're not allowed to have your tzitzis dragging on the ground. So the Magen Avraham says, but over here. It sounds like his big milo was that he put ksasos under them that everybody else would have them dragging on the ground. So we have to say no, everybody else wouldn't have had such long tzitzis. He had his tzitzis dragging on the ground. Now, the only one place you're not supposed to have tzitzis dragging on the ground is in the, or tzitzis out even, is in the Beis HaKvaros, right? In the Beis HaKvaros, the tzitzis have to be tucked in, but that's a separate issue of loig l'rash. This is just a bizui mitzvah that the person has to treat their chefter shel mitzvah with respect. So you don't want to be mevaza your mitzvos. That we should treat with loving care and respect all the things that we do mitzvahs with. Meaning it should be a reflection of how valuable the mitzvahs are to us and how we realize that the mitzvahs are our most important possessions are not really possessions at all. They're our mitzvahs. So we should treat them in that way. Right? We kiss our tefillin before we put them away. We kiss Tashmishei Kedusha. And there are those, the Svardim, it's quoted in Kaf HaChaim, that kiss Tashmishei Mitzvah also, not just Tashmishei Kedusha. They kiss their matzahs, they kiss the, you know, the Gemara talks about kissing the land of Eretz Yisrael, that, as they say, the Brisker Rav came to Eretz Yisrael, he didn't kiss the ground. And they asked him, why not? Why don't you kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael? It says in the Gemara. So he says, if you look in the Rambam, the Gemara says about different Amoraim that kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam writes that Gedolei HaChachamim were knowing to kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael. So the Brisker Rav says, Diyuk in the Rambam, that it's only for Gedolei HaChachamim. So that's why I didn't do it, because I'm not among the Gedolei HaChachamim. So he didn't kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael. Diyuk in the Rambam. Pashtus says, the Rambam was just described. The Gemara gave the names of the people that did it. So the Rambam says that's Gedolei HaChachamim we're supposed to probably mimic the behavior of the Gedolei HaChachamim. Brisker Rav held not that way. He thought that it's Tafka. You know, there are certain things that are appropriate for us to learn from Gedolei HaChachamim, and certain things that they do because they're on their madrega, and it doesn't make sense for everybody to pretend to be on their madrega. You know, it doesn't make sense for us to copy every chumrah and every hanhaga that Gedolim have. You know, the Chavetz Chaim may or may not have had a bag packed for Mashiach. It probably would not be a reasonable chumrah for all of us to have a bag packed for Mashiach. Like, do we live the rest of our lives? You know, as if we're ready for Mashiach. Chavetz Chaim lived in one room and it looked like, hovel. Yeah, so he had his bag packed for Mashiach. But, you know, as you're building an extension on your house, you get a bag packed for Mashiach. You know, it doesn't, we're not about Madrega like that. It doesn't make sense. So, anyway, so you had these three rich people. So, Chadar Malhu, Ana Zainalu Bechitu Sa'ari. So one of them said that I'm going to supply wheat and barley for all the people of Yerushalayim, because the import-export was a real problem. They couldn't get anything in or out, really. One of them said, I'll provide all the wine and the salt and the oil that they need. It's interesting because, you know, wheat and barley are a necessity. Salt, oil, I imagine also a necessity. Why is wine such a necessity? Like, you can't live without wine. What do you need the wine for? So Pasha says, no, we really need wine for a couple of things. We need for mitzvos. We need Kiddush wine. We need Avdala wine. We need to do mitzvos with wine. We need Dalet Kosos. And also, there is some value in wine, right? The Gemara says, Lo niver bo yayin el menachem bo asa avelim. That wine was created by Hashem in order to be menachem avelim, in order to take the edge off sometimes. Obviously, a person has to be very, very careful that it be in the right measure and at the right time and all of those things. But it is a necessity on a certain level. And one of the Ashirim said that he'll provide wood for to light the ravins, so that they can, you know, all the wheat and barley in the world is not going to help you if you can't bake bread. So the only way to bake bread is if you have fuel for the oven. The only fuel for the oven would be wood. And that's not so easy to come by in Yerushalayim. Right? Even in construction, you look around, there's so much construction. It's such a chizik. When you go around there, it's so, I mentioned this in the past, like if you have cranes per capita, right? It's almost like there are more cranes than people in Eretz Yisrael. It's unbelievable. And it's, they just can't build fast enough. There's a housing crisis, a huge housing crisis. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who lives in Modi'in. He said he can't get anything for under 5 million shekel in Modi'in. It's like, it's crazy. It's just a huge housing crisis. They just can't build them fast enough. They can't build enough and fast enough to supply the necessity that they have. But you see all the construction is all in concrete. They don't build with wood. Meaning we build with steel, and then they build around with whatever, paper, sheetrock, you know, and whatever else. But it's all concrete here. So because there isn't wood to be had. Wood is not a. It's a you can get from Marzei Levanon. You go to Lebanon, you get wood. That was the big deal. That when Shlomo HaMelech needed to build the Beis HaMikdash, the David HaMelech had secured the Marzei Levanon in order by making a relationship with Lebanon in order to bring wood. But it's not easy to come by. So this one provided all the wood. Rav Chista kala kli di avmasu l'shamei bar midetzivi. And wood was so valuable. I'm sorry, v'shibchu rabbanu l'detzivi. The rabbanu were m'shabeach, the one who provided the wood, because that was the biggest deal. That was the biggest deal of all of them. And the raya is that it's the biggest deal. The Rav Chista kala kli di avmasu l'shamei bar midetzivi. He would give over his keys to his shamish, his trusted shamish, to take care of his home, except for the keys to the storage facility where he kept the wood. Damer Rav Chista, akal b'duchiti b'yishitin akal b'detzivi. That for one storage facility of chitim, you need 60 storage facilities of wood in order to bake the bread that you're going to make with that chitim. See, we don't think of wood as such a commodity because we turn on our ovens by turning our wrist, and either the gas or the electricity comes on and burns the oven. They didn't have electricity and they didn't have natural gas, right? So all they had to light an oven was wood. That was all they were able to use. So they couldn't, without wood, you couldn't eat. So it was very important for them to, meaning we think of a wood for a fire is that you want to turn on the fireplace, you know, or you want to have a campfire in camp and roast marshmallows. That's not what wood was. Wood, you couldn't eat without wood. All the wheat in the world is worthless without wood. So and they had enough supply. These people were so rich that enough supply to last for 21 years. So sometimes you think, you know, that you do the math, and mathematically it works out. I have 21 years worth of supply, so of course we're good for at least 21 years. And if my investments turn out well, we'll be good for 40 years. But the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world, and there's no predicting what's going to happen next. And, you know, when you have all your ducks lined up and everything is exactly the way you want it to be, the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world. You don't get to choose how things happen, and one disaster happens, and you could lose everything, right? I think they say, and I read the biography of Paul Reichman, of Moshe Reichman, who was probably the biggest Baal Tzedakah in the history of the Jewish people, and you know, and his goal at some point—I don't know if it said this in biography or someone else told me this—that his goal at some point was to set up 10 generations of his family to never have to work. 10 generations. Think about what the numbers of people you're probably talking about from families, 10 generations. I think about like my grandfather, so Zayin Gesund. My grandfather is 94 years old, so Bli Ayin Hara, he has right now several great-great-grandchildren. But, you know, we're talking a lot of people, you know, and that's only 5 generations. And it increases exponentially every generation. I think Rav Eliashiv had over 1,000 descendants when he died, something like that. So can you imagine, like, and that's 5 generations, so 5 more. So Paul Reichman wanted to set it up, but then Canary Wharf happened, and the huge investment, and went belly up, and he didn't die a poor man, but you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world. Ribbon Shalom decides. We can't do all the cheshbonos and think that we have it all figured out and that everything's going to go the way we want it to go. The Ribbon Shalom runs the world. So what happened? They had enough to last for 21 years. Havu hani biryoni, but there were these people that were impetuous and very hot-headed, and they wanted to fight with the Romans. So Amar lo Rabbanan, the Rabbanan said to the biryonim, Navid shalom b'adayim. The Rabbanan said, no, let's go try to make shalom with the Romans. Lo shafkinu, but these biryonim wouldn't let them. He said, no, we have to fight. So Amar lo hu, Navid karma b'adayim. Let's go, so the biryonim said to the Chum, let's go fight a war. So Amar lo Rabbanan, lo mistayim il. So the Rabbanan said, we're not going to win a war. It's not going to help. You don't fight a losing battle. This Gemara was the source of the machlokas, the historical machlokas about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, whether they did the right thing, right? Meaning essentially, the Warsaw Ghetto was going to be liquidated, and they were all sent to, which camp were they all sent to? They were sent to Treblinka, I think, which was not even a concentration camp, it was a death camp. And they were all exterminated, mamish, they were all murdered immediately. And the people in the ghetto realized that they were going to be killed, and they said, "Why should we go like lambs to the slaughter?" So they smuggled in whatever guns, whatever weapons, whatever they could, and they knew that it was a suicide mission, but they're going to at least they'll fight. So they had the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, and and at least they went down fighting. So there's a lot of politics behind that because, in the Medina, certainly in the early stages of the Medina, there was a lot of feeling of kochi votzim yadi yasuli asachayel azeh. That the idea that Jews don't go like lambs to the slaughter and that we're assertive and that we're strong and that we're going to fight. So that became very associated with a certain type of secular Zionism. So that caused a lot of people to say that the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was wrong because that's a Jew does go like a lamb to the slaughter. A Jew does not fight. That's not the way the Jews behave. We're not kochi votzim yadi types of people. But Pashtus is, Rav Nachum Zembel was in the Warsaw Ghetto. He's the one that made the decision. Rav Nachum Zembel was a gon adir. Rav Nachum Zembel was among the Polish gaonim. He was like the biggest. He was the one that was that they all looked to. He was the senior authority. He's a person who produced a few svarim that we actually have, but there were tens of thousands of pages of Chidushei Torah that were lost forever to us, that didn't make it through the war. And he paskin that they should fight. He was right, it turns out, because they all went to Treblinka. They all would have died the next day anyway. So it wasn't even a shayla. But they point to this Gemara because they say, it was the Baryonim that wanted to fight. The Chum said, let's not fight. But the obvious answer is, the Chum said, let's not fight because we could actually survive if we don't fight. Meaning, we may not have control of Yerushalayim. We may not have, the Beis HaMikdash. But we'll live. It's Pikuach Nefesh. And there was actually an option of survival. Whereas by the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, there was no option of survival. But Gedolei Olam Arba, I'm not here to paskin on, on that that discussion of whether it was right or wrong, although it seems to be that it was right, but there were gedolei olam that didn't like it. So anyway, kamu kalinu lahanu amberi dechiti usari vavakafna. So these baryonim decided to burn all these storehouses of wheat and barley, and now memela there was a famine, there was nothing left. So marta baspaitos atir to dushlayim havi, just to let you know just how horrific things were in Yerushalayim at that time. There was a woman, Marta Bas Baitos. She was from the richest people in Yerushalayim. The Gemara in Yevamos, we learned recently in Dav Yomi, says that Yoshua ben Gamla was Mekadesh Marta Bas Baitos. So the Marsha says that it can't be the same one, because the Gemara in Yevamos says it was in the times of Yanai HaMelech. Yanai was from the descendants of the Beis Chashmonai, which was before the Churban. But it could be that that there were two Yanais. So it's a question, there are either two Marta Bas Baituses or two Yanais in order to make the generations work out. But she was an extremely, extremely wealthy woman. Shadarti l'shlucha, so she sent a shliach to the shuk, v'armalei zil aisi li smida. And she said, go bring me some flour.
So the ozel is davened. By the time the shliach made it to the shuk, all the flour was sold out. Right? It's like, you know, when everyone, I mean, it's a little different, but, you know, when everyone panic buys before a snowstorm or before a pandemic or whatever. So he said to her, smidaleka, there's no fine flour, but chivartika, but there's white flour. So Amrle, she said, zilaisli, okay, go get me the white flour. It doesn't have to be the fancy flour. You don't have to go to the fancy supermarket. You can go to the less fancy supermarket. Adazel was daven, but by the time he got there, he went back. It was already sold out. Also Amrle, chivartaleka, gushkara ika. There's no clean flour, but there's coarse flour. So Amrle, she said, zilaisli, I'm starving. Just go get it for me. Adazel was daven. By the time he went, it was already sold out. Also Amrle, gushkara leka, kimcha desari. Ika. There's no wheat flour at all. There's only barley flour, which is considered a much lower quality food. So Amalei, she said, Zilaisili, go get it for me. Adazel is davin. And it was sold out by the time he went. The Marsha says, you know, the whole story is such a strange story. Like, doesn't the guy get it? Like, it's just, buy whatever's there. They're starving. Just get whatever's there. So he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it that it should happen in such a way that there were dafka be four types of bread that she requested, because b'zmat shavis mukshayi kaim there were four types of lechem and lach metoda. So since we were kaf v'tova, so they burnt all the mezonos that they had. Hakadosh Baruch Hu gave them a supply for 21 years, and they were kaf v'tova. So the karban toda became bottle in the base of mikdash. So they were punished through these four types of bread, four types of lach metoda. Important to realize that a lot of the success that we have, all of the success that we have, comes from the Ribono Shel Olam, and we have to be grateful for all of it. We have to, you know, when we say Modim Anachem Lach, look, every bracha Shmona Esrei we should have kavana in, but it's a basic Jewish midah to have kavana when we say Nodel Cha in benching, when we say Modim Anachem Lach in Shmona Esrei. We have a lot of hoda'ah to give. It's a good trick. Rabbi Reisman told us from Rav Pam. That Rav Pam said that when you're benching, when you're up to noda, he said to keep your concentration, just like count off on your fingers the things that you're thankful for. You keep saying al in benching. Al Arzatov, Brisach Shanta, Tras Shaman, right? So just count them off on your fingers, and that will help you focus on the words of benching. Just count them off on your fingers. Like, actually, physically, like, count them off on your fingers. And get back to me, tell me how many there are. So you said that I found that helped me a lot with benching. Unless I'm so spaced out by the time I get to another that I forget to count them. Sometimes I catch myself in the middle, so I'll get two or three of them in there. But it's kedai, and in modem also there are a bunch of owls that in modem also. So just count off the owls, and the things that you're thankful for. It helps. It helps a lot in concentration. Such an important midah. Rabbi Razman said at his mother's levaya that his mother had visited the biblical zoo in Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim, and she was so taken by the biblical zoo that their psukim related to every animal, and it was such a beautiful zoo. She had such a beautiful outing with her grandchildren. So it's the Tisch Biblical Zoo, the Tisch family. Right? They own the Giants, or they owned the Giants. I don't know. They're a big family, big philanthropy, whatever. So she got home to America. She opened up a Manhattan phone book. She looked up the Tisch family, and she called up Mrs. Tisch to thank her for making such a donation to enable Mrs. Rosner to take her grandchildren on a nice outing to the zoo. And she left a message. You know, she got a machine or something, she left a message. And Mrs. Tisch called her back. She said, all the years, no one ever called. No one ever said thank you. So it was very touching to her that she called her back. Karzatov for everything. Karzatov for everything. I was very moved by that story. So that's the four lach metoda. We lose out the lach metoda because of that. So have a shlifa basana. So this Marta bas Paitos was going without shoes, which of course, you know, they were doing that out of necessity. So we do that as a sign of avelus. We go without shoes. but in a certain sense, going without shoes is a symbol of having nothing. And when you don't wear shoes. Although when I walked in tonight, Terrell liked the fact that I was wearing flip-flops. He goes, Rabbi, my man, I never seen you in flip-flops before. So she didn't have any shoes. So Amra, Epuk va'achzi, imashkach namidi l'mecha. Oh? I don't have my phone with me to turn on the lights. Anyway.
You know what I'm doing?
I can't really see anything. So, I have no idea what the Gemara is about to say. Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you. So, Amra Ebek Vachli Meshkach Lamidim Lamechal. She said, I'm going to go out to the city and see if there's anything to eat. So she yatsa. So Esav La Parta. Part of Bekara, she stepped in animal excrement with her feet, so she's barefoot, and she steps right into, you know, animal excrement, umesa, and she just couldn't handle that. She was such an istinus that she died from that experience. It was just too gross for her, which also, you know, a lot of times we make ourselves into an istinus. Like, I don't know, we become so used to the finer things in life that, like, we make ourselves into an istinus. So she was used to living in a certain way that she became, that she died from that. So Karla Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai said the pasuk about her from the Tochacha, from Devarim Chavchas, the Tochacha, Harako v'chava anuga shalo nisso chaf ragla. That she was such an istinist that her the heel of her feet couldn't handle what it went through. Some say that it wasn't a result of that she died from, but it was the grogros of Rabbi Tzaddok that she died from. So what was the grogros of Rabbi Tzaddok that she died from? Rabbi Tzaddok Yosef Arban Shnim B'Tanis Alach Yerushalayim. Rabbi Tzaddok fasted for 40 years that Yerushalayim shouldn't be destroyed. Talk about a sense of achrayus for Klal Yisrael. You know? A sense of achrayus for Klal Yisrael. That imagine the deprivation of 40 years of not eating because Klal Yisrael is in the tzar. Klal Yisrael is, you know, there's a halacha that b'shas milchama it's asur taftash mishamita. Because when Klal Yisrael is in the tzar, a person is supposed to refrain from pleasures, and the person is supposed to feel the pain of Klal Yisrael and take a chrayus for Klal Yisrael. I was just talking to a number of my colleagues in Chinuch, and their overwhelming feeling is that we need to work on that in this generation, that sense of a chrayus for Klal Yisrael. I don't know how many Balabatim are aware of this, but in the world of Chinuch there's an absolute crisis going on right now. That there just aren't enough mechanchim. When I left DRS, Rabbi Kavinetsky said he had 70 resumes on his desk the next day. This past year, they had three resumes. There's a real crisis. So why are people not going in? And it's not only in the modern Orthodox world, it's in Lakewood, people discovered that you can make money selling things on Amazon, so why should they be a third grade Rebbe if you can make more money selling things on Amazon? And they're right, they can make more money selling things now sometimes, if you know what you're doing. And a lot of times, you know, the whole argument is, I'll have a better life. I'm going to, you know, I'll be able to provide more for my children, I'll be able to work, I'll get more covered, you know, no one's going to disrespect me. A lot of times, mechanchim feel that, you know, they walk into to a shul, and, you know, if you're only a fourth grade rabbi, so then you get, you know, you should be bowing at their feet. You ever try to teach a room of fourth graders? I did. It was an absolute disaster. Absolute disaster. More cover for those guys. You know, and so there's an absolute crisis. And the taina is always that it's going to be better for me. Well, the question is, is that really the way we're supposed to make decisions based on what's better for me? Meaning, there's an achrayus for Klal Yisrael. And if Klal Yisrael has a need, then there's a problem. I mean, obviously, our community is self-defeating, because the second a child says he wants to go into chinuch, not only do his parents discourage him, because parents are naturally nervous that the kids aren't going to have enough money, but the whole community discourages him. Right? Oh, that's your plan. That's not a plan. That's not a plan. And he has to hear that. One of the Madrichim on the Yantzis Waikol told me, every time he tells that to any of his parents' friends, that's their response. That's not a plan. They look down at him like immediately. So when their grandchildren need rebbeim, what are you going to, you know, they're going to complain. How come no one went into chinuch? That's why. But there has to be a sense of achrayus for the Jewish people. And not only about chinuch, about anything. We always have to have a sense of achrayus for the Jewish people. Says Rabbi Tzadok, the sense of achrayus that he had for the Jewish people. That he fasted for 40 years that Yerushalayim shouldn't be destroyed. So you can imagine what that does to a person's health. So kiavachol midi, when he would eat anything, have a mischazi me'abroi, you could see the food going through him from the outside of his body. He was so frail and he was so skinny, you could actually see the food going through him. V'chiavabari, and when he wanted to strengthen himself, ma'isi le'grogros, they would bring him dry figs, because he couldn't eat dry figs, but mayitz mayu, he would suck out whatever juice was left in the dry figs, because he couldn't have solid foods, he couldn't digest solid foods. And then v'shadilu, then he would throw out the shell, or whatever was left, once he sucked out all the juices of the dried figs, he would throw out the shell. So you have a kanicha nafsha. When Marta Bas Baitus died, apikta l'kol dava v'kaspa. So again, so that was the second day in terms of how she died. The first day was she died by stepping in animal excrement with bare feet. And the second day was that Rabbi Tzadok, when he ate these dried figs, after fasting for 40 years, threw out the shells of the dried figs. She found those shells and ate those, and that killed her. She was so desperate for food that she was eating the shells of sucked out dried figs that Rabbi Tzadok had had, and that's what killed her, because she was an instance. So Kiyav Kanicha Nafsha, when she died, I picked the Kaldava Vakaspa, they took out all the Zav and the Kesef Shadisa B'shuka, and they threw it out in the Shuk. She was extremely wealthy, but all the money in the world doesn't help if there's no food to be had, if there's no food to buy. Sometimes people come to this realization, you know, when someone is very ill, and they have very, you know, they're very rich. It doesn't help sometimes. All the money in the world can't buy you life. And sometimes it could buy you better care and things like that. It could extend life. But sometimes the Rebbe Shalom decides it's time. The money doesn't help. We spend so much of our lives chasing money. And often for good things. Often for very good things. You know, to educate our children. To do mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. And often not for such good things. Often just stam for indulgences. So much of our lives chasing money. So here, all this, imagine the imagery of this gold and silver, billions, and just throws it out in the street. Amra, haile maimi baili. So she said, who wants this? I don't need this. That they would throw out their kesef into the outside. The pasuk continues that kaspam zavam liyuchal atzilam biyom evras Hashem, that all your kesef and zav is not going to save you on the day of God's wrath. It's not going to help. One of my favorite Divrei Musri that I heard recently, I said it in the Smichas Chavar Shir, I'll probably say it again a lot of times because I really like it, is Rav Eliyada Goldberg pointed out that there's a halacha that when you go in the cemetery, we mentioned before, you can't have your tzitzis out because it's loving l'rush. It's mocking the dead that you're able to do a mitzvah and they're not able to do a mitzvah. So, you know, it's unbelievable. There is no halacha in Shulchan Aruch, no halacha. That you're not, when you go to the cemetery, that you're not allowed to fly your private jet, land on the runway right next to the cemetery, walk in with your custom-made suit, your Rolex, your $2,000 shoes. There's no halacha that you're not allowed to walk in the cemetery like that. I loig l'rush. They can't. The mason can't do anything like that anymore. They're not jealous of that. They're looking at you like you're an idiot. That's what you're spending your life chasing. No halacha. It's not loig l'rush. It's not. They're laughing at you. That's not you mocking them. The Mason are mocking us if we go like that. But the inability to wear tzitzis, that's the Hagurash. That's a mockery of the dead. Abasikra, meaning there's an emuna bitachon issue. We have to work on our emuna and bitachon. That the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world. You know, think about some of the people that are making money today doing various jobs. You know how many people are, you know, in my age group are making money doing jobs that were not invented when they were training for their profession? Well, the Zoom kind of data is coming back on. Okay. It's been consistent until now. I just
got a notification, meaning in progress, and maybe just it would tell me it got off, I think, in my watch.
So. Oh, okay. Wow, that's pretty spitzy.
I didn't even say that.
The Ribbono Shel Olam decides how things are going to work out. The Ribbono Shel Olam decides who's gonna, you know, be what they call nowadays successful and who's not going to be. Let me see if I can connect on this one. Until that one gets back on. Anyway, so we said that's how Marta Bas Paitus died. So now the Gemara tells us the continued conversation. I'm back here. Okay. I'm back on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody. So now the Gemara tells us I should turn on the video, I guess. The Gemara tells us the issues between the Bar Yonim and the Chachamim. It's amazing that one of the people who were the leaders, the ringleaders of the Bar Yonim, was a nephew of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a churban hero, and his nephew was the leader of one of the leaders of this group that wanted to fight. So Shalachay, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sent to his nephew, look, we have a relationship, let's talk this out. Tabitzin Legabai, come to me quietly, let's have a secret meeting. So Asa, so this Abasukra came to his uncle. So Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said to him, Ademas of Disuachi, what's your game plan? How long are you going to do this? And not let us try to make peace with the Romans. Because this is the Almu Bekafna. You realize you're killing the Jewish people, everyone's dying of starvation over here because of you. Samaleis, Abasikra said, Mayavid, the Aminu Midi Katuli. He said, look, the movement has gotten out of my control. I lost control of it. If I do anything now, they're going to kill me. Meaning they're so bought into their agenda that there's no reasoning with them anymore. And this happens also a lot. That sometimes, you start a movement with righteous ideas, or what you think is righteous ideas, and it's not properly guided, and it's not properly led, and then the masses just take it to such an extreme that there's no reasoning with them anymore. That it's just, you know, they're so, their identity is so bound up with those ideals that they believe they represent, that they would kill their own leaders if their own leaders abandoned those ideals. I was once involved in a situation where someone created terrible machlokas, and after a while, someone said to him, why don't you put a stop to this? And he said, I lost control of it. I can't. Mamish, same story. He said, I just can't. I lost control of it. The people that followed me aren't following me anymore. They're on their own, So they're creating greater machlokas. Still happens to me in that particular situation. So Amaleis, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai said, Chazili takantel the didi to epuk efshad avi hatzala porta. So he said, maybe let me get out, and if I go out, maybe there will be a hatzala porta. It is also fascinating that there's a chasam sofer that says in drushas that, there's a big question in halacha. Let's say you have a community is under threat, and the rabbi could escape. Or the chacham, the abbeis din, whoever could escape the threat, So should he escape or should he stay with the people? So there was a maisa in Prague where the Nedvi Yehuda was the Rav, and there was a major threat to the community, and the Nedvi Yehuda could have escaped, and he wanted to, and the people didn't let him. They said, no, you're a Rav, you gotta be here, you can't leave. So the Chassam Sofer, who lived 50 years later, had a long assessment of who was right. Was the Nedvi Yehuda right, or the people right? And he said, fascinating, he said, if you look at Churban Bayis Rishon and Churban Bayis Sheni, it's two different models. That Bayis Rishon, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, was with the people. He never got out. Bayis Sheni, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, he got out. Now it happened to be Yirmiyahu couldn't get out, he was in jail, right? But Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai felt that he could be poel more for the people from the outside. So he got out. I mean, that's the svara. The svara is, the Gemara says in Brachos that Ein Chavish Matir Atzmo in Beis Asur, that a person, you know, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan, when someone else was sick, Rabbi Yochanan was merape the person. He said, Chavivin Alecha Yisurin, you like your Yisurin? He said, Lo Hein V'lo Schar, I can't stand these Yisurin. So he said, Ten Li Yadcha, give me your hand, and he held his hand, and he was merape him. And then when Rabbi Yochanan was sick, someone else had to come be merape Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says, why wasn't if Rabbi Yochanan had the kol ha-refuah, why wasn't he just merape himself? So the Gemara says, Ein chavish matir atzmo beis asur, the person can't get himself out of trouble. But you could daven for other people. If you're in the state of calm, you could daven for other people by feeling their tzara, even though you're not actually experiencing their tzara. So that was the svara, to daven from the outside. But it's remarkable that that's how it turns out. So much so that the Navi Yirmiyahu, you know, Tosfos writes in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, I think. No, it must be in Tainus. I'm not remembering. But Tosfos writes that when the Navi describes when the walls of the city were breached, so by Churban Bayis Rishon it said that it happened on the 9th of Tammuz, not on the 17th of Tammuz. By Sheni, the Gemara says it was 17th of Tammuz. So the Gemara says, the Babli says, in the Bayis Rishon it was on the 9th of Tammuz, because that's what the Pasuk says. Shteit in Pasuk was the 9th of Tammuz. So the Yerushalmi says, no, it was really the 17th of Tammuz in Bayis Rishon also. So Tosfos says, what do you mean the Yerushalmi is against the Pasuk? Yirmiyahu HaNavi was there, and he told us that it was on the 9th of Tammuz. How can you say that the walls were breached on the 17th of Tammuz? So Tosfos writes that there was such chaos in their lives that they lost track of days. They didn't even know what day it was. And Yirmiyahu HaNavi, they thought it was the 9th of Tammuz. And they were off by 8 days. They didn't even know what day it was. People that went through the concentration camps, you know, there's no day, there's no night, they lost track entirely. So they were 8 days off. And even when we realized afterwards that it was a mistake, Yirmiyahu HaNavi wanted to preserve that sense of complete cluelessness and chaos in their lives, so he wrote the wrong date in the Navi. Tosfos writes like that. So the impression you get is that maybe having a calmer situation might have been beneficial for Yirmiyahu HaNavi to be able to daven for Klal Yisrael. I don't know, it's hard to know. The Chassam Sofer says that he's not being machri on the Shail, but it came up a lot of times. It came up a lot of times during the Holocaust. There were a lot of people that could have gotten out, a lot of Rabbanim that could have gotten out. The Warsaw Ghetto, the leaders of the Warsaw Ghetto, Rabbi Gladstein writes all of this in his book, that all the leaders of the Warsaw Ghetto, the three big rabbis in the Warsaw Ghetto, were offered by the Catholic Church that they can get out. You have 1 hour to make the decision. And they sat down for a din Torah, whether they should go or not. And since it's din nefashos, they're poschim min atzad, so they started with the katan shebehem. And the youngest among them said, who am I to speak? I'm the youngest among us, but I feel that we can't leave. How can we leave the people behind? Our avod is to be mechazik the people. And the other two didn't even speak. They said, that's it. We have to be mechazik the people. So they stayed. And it's hard to know historically who was right. You know, they all died. They all died. They were all sent to Treblinka, or they all died in the uprising, whatever. They all died. So it's hard to know historically who was right. Because look at those who took the opportunity to escape. Right? There are those who took the opportunity, either bal karcham or willingly. The Sabra Rebbe, Zecher Levracha, escaped. It's well known. He got in the chasm transport and he escaped. He wasn't able to bring everybody with him. I'm sure he would have loved to, but he couldn't. But he didn't stay with the people. He escaped. But look what he was able to rebuild. Look at the Hasidus he was able to rebuild. Many of the Rebbes that stayed, their Hasidus died with them. They're shells of what they were. It's very hard to judge people like this. I mean, historically, it doesn't... They're heroes. The ones that stayed are heroes, but the ones that left made themselves heroes. You know, they realized that they had an avoda to do. The Panovich Rav didn't escape. He was stuck on the outside. Panovich Rav was traveling. He was in Palestine at the time. He was going to America to fundraise, and he couldn't get back in. It was everything. And look what he and it haunted him. All of his children, except for one, died, and his wife. They all died. They were all murdered. And look what he rebuilt. At his Hakamas HaMetzeva, they said that his whole life, every night when he went to sleep, he would toss and turn. All he could think about was the guilt that he had by not being there with them. But that guilt drove him. And look what he was able to build. Panovich Rav didn't just build Panovich. The entire Bnei Brak. And look at all the Yisomim he took care of. Every Jewish child that ended up in Eretz Yisrael, how he took care of them, how he would galvanize people and call everybody to the base medrash or wherever they were, to the center of town, and he said, "We're not allowed to sleep tonight until every yassam has a pillow to sleep on." And people were giving their own pillows. So because the Panovich Rav was such a leader, he wasn't with the people. He didn't die together with the people. It's a very, very difficult thing to really like. Wrap our minds around in terms of is there a right, is there a wrong, is there. It's like the Ribbono Shel Olam puts Klal Yisrael sometimes and puts the leaders of Klal Yisrael into these impossible situations. And the argument could be made that the leader's job is to stay with the people. So, you know, imagine if every fireman said that. Right? You sign up to be a fireman. Then a fire breaks out. He says, "I'm not going in there. That's pikuach nefesh. You think I'm crazy? I'm not going to go in that building." But you're a fireman. Like that's your job. That's what you're supposed to do. So it could be that that's a rav's job. That he's supposed to die with his people. That he's supposed to die together with the people. Shalom leida. We should never know from such difficult things. They said that people used to send shailas to the Chazon Ish to ask, and the Chazon Ish would just say, "Ayin drashus chasam sofer." He was afraid to paskin. Can he paskin these kinds of things? So the Chassam Sofer works through both sides. Chassam Sofer sounds like he's saying that you stay with the people. Very, very difficult. How do we get to this? I don't know. Oh, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, let me out, and if I get out of the city, maybe we'll be at Salaporta. He needed to operate from the outside, which he did, as we're about to see. So Amrle, Abbasikra, said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Nekot nafshach b'ktziri, make yourself, pretend you're sick, and we'll spread, you know, we'll have Tehillim groups and everything like that. Everyone will be davening for you. And everyone's going to come and see how you're doing and be mevaker chola and everything else as if you're a goses, you know, to hear your parting words. Va'isimidi sarya, and we'll bring something that smells really bad. Va'agni gabach, and we'll put it next to you on your bed. V'leimru denach nafshach, and we'll tell everyone that you died and that your body is decomposing and that's what the smell is from. So we'll take a carcass of an animal, we'll put it on your, you know, we'll put it in your coffin, and there will be the smell emanating from the coffin that you'll be lying in, and they'll think that you're dead. And then your talmidim will come to carry you out, to bring you to the cemetery, which is always outside of the city. And we just won't let anyone else carry your mita. Because if anyone else carries your mita, they'll realize that you're too light. Because everyone knows that a living person is lighter than a dead person. I don't think if you put it on a scale, a living person is lighter than a dead person. I think what it means is that when a person is alive, they can shift their weight in such a way where if you're trying to carry them, that they can make it easier for you to carry them. Right? I mean, if you carry, let's say you pick up a 20-pound baby, it's easier to carry, if the baby wants to be carried, it's easier to carry a 20-pound baby than it is to carry a 20-pound, you know, rock. Because the rock doesn't adjust its weight. The baby puts his head on your shoulder and hugs on a little bit and whatever. It's much easier to carry. But that's what they call dead weight. That when something is dead, when something is not alive, it doesn't adjust its weight. It's much harder to carry. That's the expression, Chazal have a chai no se es atzmo. That a chai carries itself. Not, oh, the baby's not carrying itself. You're carrying the baby. No, but the baby's helping. So that's the concept of dead weight versus live weight. So they knew that... That they would sense right away that he was alive if anyone else would carry. So they had a few people that were in on the secret, and they were the ones that were supposed to carry Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai. So Avid Hachi, Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai did what Abba Sikra said. He followed his Eitza. Nichlef Rabbi Lozer Mitzalech and Rabbi Shua Mitzalecher. So Rabbi Lozer, one of his Talmidim, carried his Mita on one side and Rabbi Shua on the other side. When they got to the wall, the gate of the wall of the city, the Baryonim, again, who were the insiders, these were not the Romans, these were Jews, wanted to stab him in order to show, in order to verify that he was really dead. So Abba Sikra said, what are you going to do? Yomru, we picked enough fights with the rabbis already. The rabbis wanted us to go make peace. We insist on fighting. We burnt down all the food. We burnt all the warehouses of food that they had. Yomu Rabban Dakru. Now they're going to say that you took the chief rabbi and you stabbed his dead body. Nivela mace like that. So Baldamidcha faced. They said, okay, let's just pinch him. You know, see if he screams. You know, we're not going to stab him. Let's just do something to see if he screams. So Amalu, Abba Sikra said, come on, Yom Rabban Dachfu, it's also such bizyainus, you're going to do that to the dead rabbi? So Paschle Bava Nafak, so they listened, that much they listened to Abba Sikra, they were willing to reason with Abba Sikra, and they opened the door and they let him out. Kimatul Hasam, when Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai got to where Aspasinus Kesar was, again, Aspasinus Kesar was the second choice, because, what was the first guy's name, Neron Kesar? Decided to convert. So Aspasinus Kesar was one that was actually sieging Yerushalayim. So when he got to where Aspasinus Kesar was, so Amar, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, greeted him and he said, Shalom Alech Melech, Shalom Alechem Melech, Shalom Alech Melech, and he said it twice, Shalom Alechem Melech, he called him Melech twice. Marsha says that that's Derech Eretz, that you're Kofel Shalom L'Malchus, the Marsha says. That you're supposed to be Kofel Shalom L'Malchus. Meaning, the Achronim explain that a melech needs two types of shalom. A melech needs shalom from the outside and needs shalom from the inside. There's what's called domestic policy and foreign policy. And some, if a melech fails in either of those things, he gets along well with other world leaders, so no one's going to attack him, but there could still be an insurrection from within. Or a melech might get along well with his own country, that they're behind him, but if the rest of the world doesn't like him so much, so the melech needs two types of shalom. Shalom aleichem, so you say a double shalom aleichem to the melech. So Amar Leih, so Aspasinus said to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Mechayav is trei ketala, you're chayiv misa twice. Chadad lav malka, no, first of all, I'm not a melech, v'kakarisa li malka, and you called me a melech, and that's called being married b'malchus. And the halach is, in Judaism, that if you're married b'malchus, you're chayiv misa. Certainly in the rest of the Yom HaSalam, that's true, right? So that's one. And Vesu, Imalka, no, Adi Idna, my lowest is Ligabai. If I really am a king, where have you been? Why didn't you come to greet me earlier? Meaning, Lishi Tascha, you know, you're saying I'm a melech. How could you not come to greet someone that you believe to be a melech? So Malay, the Ka'amit love Malka, no. So he said, as far as the fact that he said that you're not a melech, Ibra Malkaat, you really are a Melech. And that's why I'm calling you Malka. Meaning, because you're going to be a Melech, and therefore you're destined for Malchus. Dilav Malkaat, and he says, my raya that you're a Melech is, because if you were not a Melech, Lomimsu Yerushalayim Biyadach. then Yerushalayim never would have been given over in your hands, because we trust the Divrei Hanaviim, Tchsiv al Levanon ba'Adir Yipol, that the Levanon will fall in the hands of an Adir. Ve'in Adir el Melech, an Adir always means a Melech. Tchsiv v'haya Adiro mimenu. And so an Adir is a Melech, who's a Moshe, who's a ruler. Ve'in Levanon el Beis Hamikdash. And Levanon means the Beis Hamikdash. Shnemar haratov hazeh v'hal Levanon. So it's you have to be a melech, because the Beis Hamikdash was given over in your hands. The Beis Hamikdash wouldn't be given over in the hands of anyone who's not a melech. It's amazing confidence in the Divrei Navi, meaning we trust our Naviim. Our Naviim knew what they were talking about, and if they said that that's the way it is, then that's the way it's going to be, despite what our eyes see, despite what our perception might be, and it might look like it's someone who's not a melech, but the Navi says that it can only be a melech. So it's got to be a melech. And now what she said, if I'm a melech, why didn't you come to me until now? And because of that, I'm chayv misa. Baryonidis b'no shavkina. He says, I have to tell you, we have problems from within. We have these baryoni that aren't allowing us to come out. So I had to escape. So Poseidon said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I don't accept your response that you couldn't come because of the baryonim. Because ilu chavish al dvash v'darkon karach aleha lo yushovna sechavish b'shvil darkon. If there was a barrel of honey and there was a snake that was after it, they should break down the barrel so that the snake will go away, because the snake is dangerous. So you should have destroyed the walls of the city and burnt it down, in order that the Brionim would be left exposed, and then you should have broken down the walls of the city, the Brionim would be left exposed, and they'll have to run away. So if the Brionim are causing you such danger, you shouldn't have just given in to them. So Ishtik, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't respond to his Poseidon's Kesar. The Gemara is going to explain why. So Kari Le Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef said about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, V'item Rabbi Akiva, some say it was Rabbi Akiva who said this about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, which is interesting, meaning it could have been one of two people, either Rav Yosef or Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was a Tanna, Rav Yosef was an Amora. So it should have said, Karele Rabbi Akiva v'item Rav Yosef. Right? Rabbi Akiva should have come first. So the Achronim work on that question. So he said, Meshav Chacham Machar v'daitam Yisakel. Kodesh Baruch Hu turns the Chachamim, ruins the das of the Chacham. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Chachma away from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that he didn't know what to respond to Aspasinus. So Yibayle Lememerle, what he should have said was, Shaklina Tzvasa, they took the wood, Shaklina Le the Darkon, meaning what you should do when there's a Darkon, when there's a snake around the honey, is take a piece of wood and kill the snake. The Chavisa Shafkina, and leave the barrel intact. And therefore, we were hoping that we might be able to overpower these baryonim, and therefore everything could remain intact. Adahachi also pristak alemiromi. While they were having this conversation, a shliach came from Rome. So Amalei kum demisle kesar. So he told us, Poseidon, you're now your time has come. You're olah l'gedula now, because the kesar is dead. Vamri hanu chashivid romi lo sivach bereisha. And the Chashuvei Romi wanted to make you, to appoint you as the new Kesar. Savasai Mechad Masani, he was removing one of his shoes. Boil Saima Achrina, he wanted to take off the other shoe. Lo Ail, but he couldn't get off his foot. He couldn't take it off his foot. His foot had swelled. Boil Mishle Lidach, so he tried to put the other shoe that was off back on. Lo Nafak, and it couldn't go on. Samar Maihai, Asposain said, what is going on over here? All of a sudden my shoes don't fit. Samalei Lotistar, don't worry, it's not like you have some dangerous condition where your feet are swelling. That when you hear good news, sometimes it fattens you up a little bit, and you heard good news that you're going to be the melech. So, or people think that's good news. So what can I do about it? So he says, so take someone that you don't like and have him walk in front of you, and it will infuriate you to see this person, and that will cause you to shrink a little bit. So Avid Hachi did that. Ayo, so interesting, right? Have someone that you don't like, and that will agitate you. That's how the whole story started, with someone that you don't like. you know, with the bar kamtza being there at the party, agitating the person. But it shouldn't work on the Jew, but it works on the guy. It works on us besides. So Amalei besides said to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, "Me'achad chachmisu kulei hai." Wow, you were able to diagnose it like that. Adi idna amaylo asisa l'gabai. He didn't ask. So why did you go into chinuch? He said, "You're so smart. You have such potential." He said, "You were so smart. You were able to figure this out. So why didn't you come to me up until now?" So Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, "Lo amilach." I already told you, it's these baryonim. Amalei anonami amilach. He said, "Yeah, but I gave you an answer to that of how you should have broken down the wall, left the baryonim exposed, and escaped." So Amalei, so now it's Poseidon says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, "Mezel azilna, I'm going to go to Rome because that's where I belong now. Now I'm the melech. Vinish achrinim shadarna. I'm going to have to send someone else to take over my job because obviously I need to hire my own cabinet. I need to have my own generals. I need to have my own people that I trust. Someone else is going to take over this job. And I don't know how nice that guy's going to be. And I don't know if he's going to have a nice relationship with you. But I'm impressed by you. So elabai mina midi detenach. You can ask whatever you want from me." So Amalei, Rabbi Yochanan says, "I have three bakashos. Number one, tein li yavne v'chachamehu." Here is the immortal words of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's trying to ensure Jewish survival, recognizing that galus is about to happen, recognizing that it's all about to end, that churban is about to happen. So he said, "Tein li yavne v'chachamehu." Number one is we need the Torah. We're not going to survive without the Torah. Number two, v'shushulta d'Rav Gamliel. We need leadership. We need the family of Rav Gamliel, the Nasi. We need some sort of zecher to the Malchus Beis David. We need to know that Klal Yisrael is going to have proper leadership. And number three, v'asvasa d'masin le'd Rabbi Tzadok. We need doctors to heal Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Tzadok was the one who fasted for 40 years. So we need to appreciate those people who are Moser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. Those are the three keys to Jewish survival. Torah learning is number one. It's always number one. Jewish leadership is number two. And having an appreciation of those people who are Moser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael, making sure that they feel appreciated. And it was a very moving event that they had when they raised all that money for the guys in the Lakewood Kola to raise the stipends. So it was very nice what they did. They didn't just raise $60 million and decide to raise everyone from $400 a month, which I don't know what that pays for, but, you know, to $1,000 a month. I don't know what that pays for either, but it pays for more than $400 a month. It wasn't just that. They made a whole event, and they invited all of them to come and give chizik and say, "We're mechabed you. You're being Moser Nefesh, learn Torah, Yom V'Laila. You're not making any money doing it. And it's a good show of support that the people that are being Moser Nefesh are being appreciated by the community." Again, we should always show that appreciation. We should always show that support to the people that are Moser Nefesh for the Jewish people. That's one of the keys to our survival. We're here because of them. Kari alei Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said, "V'itayim Rav Yakiva meishu v'chacham achor v'dayt misakel." That HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away the Chachma from the Chachamim and he ruins their das. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai didn't know what to ask for. Because he bayi lemeimer lei l'shavkinu chadazimna. He should have said, "Just leave Yerushalayim alone. Don't destroy Yerushalayim." Why didn't he ask for that? So v'hu savar dimel kulei hai lo avid. He thought that, he said that I could have one wish, but that was too big of an ask. V'atzal aporti nami lo havi. And then I won't even... And he's not going to say, "No, I'm not going to do that, but what's your second request?" Once he sees that I'm asking something that he's not willing to give, he's not going to give me another chance. So that was his thinking. But the Gemara seems to say, Rav Yosef seems to say that it was a mistake, that it was a real mistake. Right? That's what the Gemara says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai when he was dying. He said, "I don't know Beza Derech Malichanosi. I don't know which path I'm going on." Said, "What do you mean you don't know which path? You're Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You're one of the greatest tzaddikim in our history. You know exactly where you're going." No, but this haunted him his whole life, that maybe I made the wrong call. Maybe I could have saved the Beis HaMikdash. Maybe I should have asked for another chance to save Yerushalayim. a lot of times we underestimate our own influence and our own kochos. That we have the ability to do more than we think we do. So the Gemara explains us. How did they heal Rabbi Tzadok? The first day they gave him water that some, you know, some kernels were soaked in, so the water was more than just water. The next day, water that larger kernels were soaked in, and that had some flour mixed in. The next day was water that flour was soaked in, which is thicker water. They slowly, porta porta, because that's what you do with a person who's starving, right? All those terrible stories of when the American soldiers came in and liberated the camps and started handing out chocolates, and they thought they were being nice, and everyone was grabbing for it, and everyone was eating it, and they were dying from the chocolates. They couldn't. Their stomachs couldn't handle it. So this is the way to do it. You have to ease them in order to be able to withstand it. It's a mashal also, meaning when it comes to, there are things that are very good for us that we're not necessarily always ready for. You know, there are certain things that that are ruchnius and are good and are beneficial to us, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we're ready to handle it. Whether it be certain levels of Torah, certain types of Torah, there's a derech, a person has to build himself up to get to that point. Sometimes people shoot for the stars. You know, we have guys sometimes that are applying for smicha, and they you know, and they're in the top shiurim with deep lumdus, and they can't read a gemara. They skipped steps. I had a guy call me a couple of months ago, and he said that he could tell you every Reb Chaim on you know, the first half of the Sefer or something. And he said, I can't name the Parshios in the Torah. Like he said, the guy said, I started learning when I was like in 12th grade or something. I had to pretend to be the frumest guy, and I was fast talking enough that I could pretend to be the smartest guy. And he just skipped all the steps. He never learned Mishnayos, he never learned Pesukim, he skipped all the steps. He got it little by little. A lot can be accomplished when you go little by little. People often think they need to learn Shas in a day. It doesn't happen in a day, it takes time. So also Shadri Lutitus HaRasha Sas Poseinus went back to Rome. So his replacement was Titus HaRasha. So the Titus HaRasha that we read all about in this Gemara and in the Kinos tomorrow, that Titus HaRasha was the third man for the job. Right? He was the third man for the job. So Amar, Pasuk says in Dvarim, Vamar, Eyalu Heimo Tzur Chasayu, that the enemy that attacks Klal Yisrael is going to say, where's the strong God that's supposed to protect them? So that Titus HaRasha Shechir V'Gidev Klapi Maila. That's Titus HaRasha. That he wasn't Goris, the Ribbono Shlolem, at all. Ma'a, so what did he do? Taf Azona B'Yado. It's hard to even read these words. He took a Zona, V'Nichmas L'Beis Kodshei HaKadoshim, V'Yitziya Sefer Torah. He went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he unfurled the Sefer Torah, V'Avra La'Avera, and using the Sefer Torah as his sheet, as his mattress, he violated an Avera with the Zon on top of the Sefer Torah. V'natal Sayif, v'gidar is a parochas, and he took a sword, and he stabbed the parochas. V'nasa neis v'yadam v'vatsvis v'yotzei. And miraculously, the parochas started to bleed. V'ksavar harugas atzma, and he figured that he had killed the Ribbono Shalom. Shneamar, so he thought that he had been victorious. So Abba Chanan says that we darshan mi kamocha chasin ka, mi kamocha chasin v'kasha shata shomei an yutzu v'gidu v'shalos rasha v'shosek. That who can you know, hear the gidufim of that Russia and be quiet. Tvei Rav Shmuel Tanim, mi kamocha be'ilm Hashem, mi kamocha be'ilmim. that those who are mute, who have nothing to respond to the chiruf, the giduf that happened. So ma'asa, what did Titus HaRosh do? Natal sa prochas va'asa'o k'min gargusni. He made a basket out of the prochas. Ve'evi kol ha'kelim sheh b'migdash v'inichon ben. And he put all the kelim in the migdash in this basket, like a sack. Ve'oshivan b'svina. And he put them on a boat. Le'lach l'shtabech b'iro. In order to gain honor from it in his city. Shenemar uvchein reisi risham kvura muvau mukom kadosh yalechu v'yishtachu v'ir asher kein asu al tikri kvura mel kvutzim al tikri v'yishtachu v'yishtabchu. So the pasuk means that the rishayim are kvutzim, that they're going to gather and come from the place of the Beis HaMikdash in order to be mishtabeach in their city over what they did to the Beis HaMikdash. Ikeda amri kvura mamish da'afilu mili demitamran igal yilahum. That even those things that were kvurim, that were as if they were hidden, they were buried, they were things that we don't have access to. The Jewish people didn't see what's inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We never had access to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And now these things that are in the deepest recesses of the Kedusha, and that, you know, whatever is more Kadosh is more Tzenua. That's a klal in Yahudis. That Kedusha, a sign of Kedusha is Tzenius. So the Kodesh HaKadoshim is something that it's aser for anyone to be zan ein of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Your eyes aren't allowed to see the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When people had to fix it, they were lowered in boxes that had these little peepholes that they were able to see just what they were able to fix. But you're not allowed to look at the Kodesh HaKadoshim because that which is holiest has to be hidden. So they had these holy things that were supposed to be hidden. So while they were on the boat, Amidol of Nachshol, Nachshol Shabiyam Latovo, major wave was going to sink the boat. So Amar Kamaduma Ani Shalokeim Shalelu Ein Gvarasel B'mayim. So Tito said, oh, it must be that their God has power in the water. Ba Paro Tabamayim, Ba Sisra Tabamayim, Afu Omir Alai Lutoveni B'mayim. The major enemies of the Jewish people, whether it be Paro or Sisra, their downfall was in the water. So that's what's happening to me too. Im Giborhu, if their God is really so strong, Yalla Liabashav Yasim Imilchama. Let's see him come to dry land and fight with me. So Yotza Baskel Vamrlo, Rasha ben Rasha ben Benosha Leisa Varasha. Baskel came out and said, you Rasha, the son of Rasha, a descendant of Esau Varasha. Titus HaRasha was obviously descendant of Esau because that was the Beis HaMikdash was destined to be destroyed by a descendant of Esau. Bria Kali Yeshli Balami, I have this tiny little creature in my world, viyatush shema, viyitush shema, it's called a gnat. I might call it the bria kala. Why is it called the bria kala? Demalne isle umafikna lesle. It has the ability to ingest, but not to excrete. So it can eat, but it can't release any waste. You want to fight with God? Let's see you fight with this bria kala. So of course, Alul Yabasha by Yitush, Vinichnas Bechotma, the soul gnat went into his nose, up to his brain, Vinikar B'mocho Shevashanim, and started pecking at his brain for 7 years. And it only grows and grows and grows, because it doesn't excrete anything. So Yom Echadav Kachol V'Ababa Devei Nafcha, one time he was walking by a blacksmith shop, Shama Kolos Avta, and he heard the banging, the ishtik, and all of a sudden, the pain in his brain went away. So Amar Ikatakanta, so Titus realized, oh, there's a way to stop the pain by just hearing the jackhammering. So Kol Yom Maisinach, every day he brought a blacksmith, the Machu Kamei. So Lenachri Yavle Arbazuze, if it was a non-Jewish blacksmith, he would pay him 4 zuz. The Yisrael Amarle Mistayach the Kachaz Besanach. And for the Jewish person, he would say, I'm not paying you because your reward is that you get to see your enemy in such pain, in such excruciating pain. It stopped working after 30 days because the gnat got used to the sound and it wasn't frightened by the sound anymore. People get accustomed to things, so animals also get accustomed to things. Things that used to be frightening aren't frightening anymore when you get used to them. So kiven the dash dash, get used to it. Tanya, Rav Chinuchas ben Aruva ani Yisi ben Gedolei Romi. He says, I was there amongst the Gedolei Romi. When Titus died, they broke open his skull. They did an autopsy. They saw like a small bird, Mishkol Shnei Slaim, the weight of 2 Slaim. know if I ever mentioned this in the past, the Gemara says, Mila Bisela Shtika Bishtayim, that if saying words costs you a sela, is worth a sela, being quiet sometimes is worth two slayim. Right, that's the expression that the Gemara uses. Silence is worth twice as much as words. You know, words can be very valuable. Sometimes silence is much more valuable. It's twice as much. But you use that term, shnei slayim. That's how they explain that Yaakov Avinu, the Gemara says, b'shvil shnei slayim milas, that Yaakov was mishana ben abanim, yardu avasenu l'mitzrayim. Yaakov had two slayim worth of silk that he gave to Yosef that he didn't give to the other brothers. Ksonos pasim. And that's why Golos Mitzrayim happened. So why did Yaakov give Yosef Ksonos Pasim Dafka made out of two slayim of silk? So that's what some explain. He was trying to give him a message. You're going around telling your brothers your dreams and telling them how you're going to be the Melech and how they're going to bow to you. Mila Besela, Shtik Vashtayim. Here's two slayim of something. Beremiza to tell them just, you know, you don't have to say everything that's on your mind. You don't have to always overshare. So maybe this was the message to Titus also, that the thing grew to the size of two slayim. Every time he did something, HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed a miracle, he had something, he had an answer. He always had an answer. Oh, you're getting me at the ocean? Let's see you get me on dry land. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a miracle, the parochas bleeds, and it says, wow, the Rebbe Shlomo is making a miracle. Ah, I killed the Rebbe Shlomo. So everything he has an answer. Maybe he would have been better off. Shtika b'shtayim, if he would have kept his mouth shut. So Masnisa Tana Kigozel Ben Shana. Mishka said it was like a 1-year-old bird. Mishkal Shnei Litrin, which was Shnei Litrin. Amar Abayi Naktinon Piv Shal Nechoshes Yitzparnav Shal Barzel. And they saw that its mouth was made out of copper and its fingernails were made out of barzel, meaning if, just to paint the picture of how painful this must have been on his brain. Kavakamayas, and when Titus was about to die, Amaluhu, he said to his followers, the Kalyuluhu Gavra, I want you to burn my body, I want to be cremated. Ulavadri the Kitme Ashev Yamian, I want you to scatter my ashes by the seven seas. Because I don't want the God of the Jewish people to be able to find me, and then I'll have to stand for a din Torah for all that that I did. So I want to be untraceable, as if there's such a thing for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? There's some that thought that the reason a Jew can't get cremated is because then Hashem won't be able to do Tchias HaMeisim. There's no such thing. The 6 million will have, I mean, there is such a thing, a Jew's not allowed to get cremated, right? We have mitzvahs kvura. That's why a Jew's not allowed to be cremated. It's the Nisr of Nivla Meis. There's a mitzvah of kvura. But it's not because HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't do Tchias HaMeisim. Hashem Baruch Hu is going to do Tchias HaMeisim on the 6 million, even though they were all burnt in crematoria. There's no escaping, there's no amount of physical breakdown of a body that Hashem Baruch Hu can't do Tchias HaMeisim on. So the Gemara tells us a little bit more about Titus HaRasha, that Unculus Bar Kolonikus Barachte de Titus Hava. It was Titus' nephew, Baile Gure. He wanted to be Megayer. Azalaski Titus Benegida. So, He brought up Titus using the necromancy or whatever you call it of Ov Amrle. So Unkelus asked Titus, "Man chashuv u'alma? Who's the most chashuv in Olam Haba?" Amrle. So Titus acknowledged Yisrael, the Jewish people, the most chashuv in Olam Haba. Ma'alid bukibu v'hu shrei b'megayer. Amrle. So he said, "Milayu nefishin. They have a lot of mitzvos." It's not going to be easy to be mekayim these mitzvos. But here's what I'll tell you to do. Zil igari bubu alma. You should go and pick fights with them in this world. Vavis resha. And as long as you do that, you're going to be the most respected person. Dichsiv hayut sarei l'rosh. That whoever causes problems for the Jewish people becomes the leader. Kalametsu l'Yisrael, nasa l'rosh. Samulei. So Uncle says Titus, dinei dehu gavra b'mai. What's your onesh in that world? Samulei, Tito said to Unkelus, he said, "B'may de pasuk anafshe, that which I asked, that I requested, should happen to me, happen. They're doing to me. Kol yoma mechanshi le likitme, v'dayni le v'kol le mivadra shev yami. Every day they burn me and they spread my ashes over seven seas. That's what I thought I could do to escape the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam does to me. So Azal Askei Le Bilam B'Negida. Then Unkelus brought a Bilam spirit to talk to him. He wanted to interview those who caused problems for the Jewish people, and see what's good, you know, how they're doing in the afterlife. So Amalei, Man Chashav Ulamli, said to Bilam, who's the most chashav there? Amalei, Yisrael. The Jewish people are the most chashav in Olam Haba. Ma'alid Bukei Buhu, is it Kedai to connect myself to them, to be Megayer? Amalei, Lo Tidro Shlomo B'tov Asam Kalayamim. Don't look for anything good in the Jewish people. Amalei, so Uncle said, Dine Du Gavr Ma'iya, how's it going for you up there? Or down there? Amalei, B'Shech Vazara Rotachas. They boil me in Shech Vazara every day, in semen. So Azal Aske Benegida, Leposhe Yisrael. Then he called up the Jewish people who didn't live up to our expectations of what a Jew should be. So Amalei, Uncle asked him, Man Chashav Alma? He asked them, what's going on? Amalei, Yisrael, they said, no, who's the most Chashav there? He said, Yisrael, the Jewish people are the most Chashav. Ma'alid Bukibu, is it a good idea to connect to them? Amalei, so the Poshea that he called up said, Tovasam Drosh, Ra'asam Lo Tidrosh. Only look out for the good of the Jewish people, not for the bad of the Jewish people. Kalanogea Behen, anyone who tries to harm the Jewish people, Kalanogea Bebava Seinam. It's as if you're poking your own eyes out. Amalei, Dine Du Gavra B'mai. So he said, what's your onesh in Shemaim? Amalei, B'tzor Rotachas. This Poshea said that it's B'tzor Rotachas, that it's with boiling excrement. But the Gemara doesn't identify this Poshea, but it doesn't take a genius to figure it out. This is obviously a censored Gemara. The Poshea that we're talking about, of course, is Yeshu. So saying he was a Poshea, so Poshe Yisrael. So now that they fixed it, right, in many of the Girsos, they added in Yeshu, that was Yeshu. It's not just Dam Poshea Yisrael. Damar kolam alagal divrichom nidam tzara tachas. Anyone who mocks the divrich hachamim is nidam tzara tachas. That's his punishment, is with burning tzoa. So Tachazi says the Gemara, look at this. Mabin Poshe Yisrael, the Nevi'e Musolim of the Avodah Zarah. Look at the difference between Poshe Yisrael, that even though in their whole lives they were Poshim, but after the death they give Eitzah to Unklus to do good with the Jewish people. But the Nevi'e Musolim, look what they do. That even in their death, they're after the Jews, and they're trying to, you know, go and you'll be a leader if you cause aggravation to the Jewish people. Yeah, you'll suffer in the afterlife, but you'll have a great life, down here. So the Gemara brings a brisa that tells us in Moser Haskel, Tanya, Amar Lozer Bo Re Kama Gedol Kocha Shal Busha. Shreisiya Kodesh Baruch Hu is Bar Kamtza, Vehecher Vizbeisa, Vesarif Vesechala. Look at what Busha did. That because Bar Kamtza was embarrassed, Hashem gave him Siyata Deshmaya to destroy the Beis HaMikdash because of the koach of his busha. Obviously we blamed Zechariah ben Avkulas before, but that also involves Siyata Deshmaya, that Zechariah ben Avkulas will make those decisions. So it all happened because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the koach because of that busha. So we started by saying that there are three episodes here. We read through one of them, but it's very, very late, so I'm going to stop here. We have a lot more to do tomorrow, so, okay.